Hello, you're listening to the Lincoln Cast. My name is Thurbleton, and this is the week of May the 4th, and this is episode 43, or 44, of the Lincoln Cast.
Yeah.
I'm joined by self-confessed cynic.
What's up?
We're 44 episodes of the Lincoln Cast.
It's are we hitting a year yet? We should be near a year, because we skipped a couple episodes.
We're almost near a year. Actually, I have a question for you about that, because as much as I love the awesome music that I believe is provided by MC Hamster Man or something. I don't know
Hamster
his name.
Alliance.
Hamster Alliance. Do we plan on having like a season two music? Like we've been doing. Like I love the sweet jazz tunes from
Scotchcast. Yeah, I'll see if I can track down some season two music. I will consider it. We'll see what I've got to do this week. I'll do it. Just confirmed because I'm sick of it. We'll have some season two music, whether it be this week or next week.
We don't love the season one music. It's all good. It's just, why are there biplanes in a Guild Wars 2 podcast?
Well, that was always the intention for it to be. Why is it called the Lincoln Cast?
Lincoln Cast. It's Lincoln Forth. Duren, what is your opinion on our intro music?
Macarena.
No.
I don't think we have the licensing budget for that. I don't know.
We can use 30 seconds. That works, right?
Noob Rama, can you see about getting us licensing money?
Let me just go get my wallet. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, it's you have all those Canadian pennies that you've been saving up, right?
You can't even afford a good microphone, let alone licensing money, you asshole.
So how are you guys doing this week? Starting off with, I guess, this is going to be a short episode. Mm-hmm. We're going to try and make this a short one.
It's probably going
to
be short.
Basically just what we've been playing, and then move on to reviewing a couple Guild Wars 2 things that we want to talk about.
Yeah.
So I guess starting off with just what we've been playing. Cynic, how's your week been? What's new?
Awesome. Have you guys seen Iron Man 3 yet? Because I saw it last week.
I have not.
Wait, there's a third Iron Man movie?
What people have been saying, like, been giving it, like, you know, average to subpar reviews.
What are you talking about?
I enjoyed it.
IGN gave it a 9, and I thought the general consensus was good. I loved that
movie. This is not review sites. This is from my friends.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I loved it. It was great. I thought it was like, almost as good as the first one.
I really enjoyed it, but I almost don't want to say why.
No, yeah, we can't say why. Like, some of the best stuff in it, you can't even... You shouldn't see coming. Like, so
let me check on Wikipedia.
Well, it's I hope this will add some mystery to people wanting to see it, but the only other movie I've seen that has done this is The Matrix, in that the trailer hides, like, you don't know anything. Like when you see the trailer for The Matrix, you don't know that, like, it's two different worlds sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like,
they do a good job of masking what is really happening in the movie with the trailers.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed that.
Kind of like what the second movie was missing, but the first movie had. Like, this has way more character moments and, like, interesting stuff to do with, like, the Iron Man person, what Tony Stark is going through, what Pepper Potts is going through. And it's just way more. It should have been number two, because that's usually what number two does.
All right. Can I just say, Pepper Potts is a dumb fucking name, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to make sure that was not just me. That was a
No. I think by consensus, it can be considered a pretty.
Well, I don't know who fucking names their kid Durin.
Oh, I don't think that's his actual name.
Nobody.
Exactly. That's not his
noob.
That's not his name.
Then why did your parents name you Durin?
Why did your parents name you Noobarama? Well, I guess
because
they made sense. They had a permission.
In Korean, noob is like a ceremonial name based on truth and. Strength.
Is this like that Superman trailer where it's like, what's the S stand for? It's like, well, on my home planet, it stands for hope. It looks like an S.
Really?
Pretentious?
That's with the new trailer.
I'm so happy I haven't seen that. Because that is a corny-ass fucking line.
It's corny.
Wow.
It's really tough to make a good Superman movie, though, like a compelling one.
I don't know why Zack Snyder is even allowed to make movies anymore.
Oh, burn. What was the last movie you made?
Because he makes money off of it.
Oh, he made Sucker Punch, right? I haven't seen it, but I've heard bad things. We'll see. We'll see.
But Iron Man, you're a big fan of?
I was a huge fan. So I think the best... Just go into it with an open mind. Don't read too many reviews. I guess that's a bit late by now. But yeah, it's just a huge recommend for me as an Iron Man fan. Like I've read... pretty much every Iron Man until mid-2010 or so.
I mean, like, unless you hate the really campy, like, moments that in all the comic book movies.
Yeah.
Because Iron Man still has plenty of those. It's still chock full of,
it's definitely...
The jokey bits.
There's definitely elements of it that have been traditionally not enjoyed by movie-going audiences, such as a particular age group of actor who's represented in this movie. But it totally, like, aside from that, it totally works. And I, as a person who's a fan of the comics, I do not understand how, like, solid Iron Man nerds are annoyed by this movie, because it all, like, let's just put this down, right? Iron Man in one version of the comics became the Secretary of Defense.
Okay.
They've done some stupid shit with Iron Man in the comics, so I'm perfectly fine with how it happens in this movie.
And I just want to make sure of this, because it was a Marvel movie. You did stay to the very end, right?
Oh, absolutely. And the post-credit sequence totally had my favorite character from the Avengers in it. So,
Oh, yeah. The Incredible Hulk?
I can't spoil it. No, it wasn't the Hulk. I should say that. But anyway, I have to watch Iron Man. Huge recommend. Okay. Then I would say, what else to do this Fortnite?
Any books, any games, any crazy super hot foods you ate or something without knowing it?
Nibirama just messaged me, and I can say I wasn't lying when I said it wasn't the Hulk. You jackass. Don't message me on Steam during the podcast. Okay, so the second thing I did with this Fortnite was play Thomas Was Alone on Vita. I know Thurwilson's played this.
Yes, what? I am so happy about
you played a game on Vita?
Yeah, it was so...
Not only that, he played a platformer game.
Yeah, it was great.
I don't know where my Vita's at right now.
Thurwilson recommended this game to me. He's been recommending this game for me for like 3 months.
Just like, Durin, did you look under some drink? Because right now, it's pretty much a coaster.
Nice. Exactly.
Wait, is this the game you were talking about earlier? On the Gaming Hub Mumble?
I don't think so. What was I saying on the Game Hub Mumble?
We were talking about a Vita game other than Persona 5.
Yeah. Thomas Was Alone. Yeah.
Paint us a picture. What is Thomas Was Alone?
So Thomas Was Alone is about rectangles and squares who find themselves and change the world.
Okay.
Would you agree?
My 30-second pitch was it is a easy platformer that keeps people playing the game because the story is so compelling you want to keep hearing it.
Yeah.
Because it's really well done.
Who's the?
They ended up paying a very, like, really well-renowned English voice actor for it.
The crazy thing is I've literally not heard of him before, but he does such a fantastic job that I want to see what else he's done. Do you want to Google it? No.
I'm looking it up right now.
I'm not going to bother. But so essentially it made me care about...
Danny Wallace.
It made me care about rectangles and squares in a way I've never cared about them before. Because...
This just sounds like a fucking Molyneux game.
Yeah, it's really good. Like, it was really hard.
Like, I want to say that was one of his pitches once. Well, no, you're like, it's where people cared about... Like simple shapes, like a square that they never had before. I wonder if he has said that.
And this did it better than Molyneux has ever done it. Like, it's just
this is, again, just for folks who don't know. It's another product of the, like, you know, 24-hour game jam sort of thing. Like, mm-hmm. Receiver came out of a game jam.
Yeah.
I think a great number of indie games just appear out of game jams.
Yeah, but this is like, it's definitely not a low production value game.
It's been cleaned up and yeah.
Yeah, it runs silky smooth. It's
pretty. It's on Vita, for crying out loud.
Call it beautiful, but it's definitely, it has a style to it and it sticks to that style and it executes well in that style. And
this wasn't the game they played on Unprofessional Fridays, right?
No. It's actually kind of similar to that though in some ways. Like it's just basic shapes like that one.
Well, I think they came from the same game jam.
It couldn't have been because this released on PC like last year or something.
This came out on Windows in 2012 in July.
Yeah, exactly. They only just got onto Sony is now publishing it on Vita and PlayStation Network for like, it's like $10. Or $11 in Australia, I think, and it's free if you have PlayStation Plus in Europe. And
oh, in Europe, damn.
Yeah, in Europe, I think it's coming. Well, how that usually works is we get it free 1 month, and you get free the next month. So it'll probably be free next month, but it's definitely discounted for at the moment for Americans. So it's like $8 if you're in America or something like that. But no, it's great. It's like five, so I picked it up at just on a whim because the guy who made it, I can't remember his name either, has been doing a bunch of podcasts recently. So he's on recently on like IGN UK's podcast, and he was on the Game Scoop, not Game Scoop. What replaced Game Scoop?
Mike Bethel.
Yeah, Mike Bethel.
Mike B.
Yeah. He was on the game show that GameSpot has as a podcast nowadays. Nice. So he was on there, and I was like, fuck it, he's cool, he sounds cool, and Thurbleton keeps badgering me about this game, and it's only like $10, so I'll pick it up. So I picked it up. I picked it up at around 10 o'clock at night. Took me till 10:30 to figure out how to get it onto my Vita and play it on my Vita. And then after that, I started playing, and I didn't put it down till 3 a.m. where I had finished the game, and I hadn't even realized that much time had passed. It was so good. I was crazy. Like, immediately, I went on, I think it was even on that day, like at 3 a.m., onto Giant Bomb's like forums and went, hey guys, you need to buy this game. Like, barely anyone has posted on the Tom Sources own forums, but I hugely recommend it.
I'm so glad you think that way. I love just recommending a game I know people will like.
Yeah.
To folks who don't know, you can just pause this podcast or something. There is a quick look available on the Giant Bomb site.
Correct. Just, but I will warn you, it is Patrick. So take that for. I think that was kind of why people don't really care about that game.
Alternatively, I know Total Biscuit does have a WTF is of Thomas Wiseland as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he explains a bit of its creation as well.
Absolutely. And he actually brought it up on one of the more recent TGS podcasts. And that was amongst the large zeitgeist that convinced me to finally buy this game. But no, it's like, to tell you why I found it compelling, it was because... essentially, the storytelling is very simple. It has 100 levels, right? And they're pretty short. Like, they can range from 30 seconds long to like 2 minutes long. So it's actually pretty much perfect for the Vita. But how it does its plot is that at the start of every level or so, sometimes during the level is going on, you usually get like one or two sentences from the narrator. And this is the actual narrator, like Bastion-esque narrator that tells.
Yeah, I was gonna say like very Bastion, like as you're playing and like scripting. Once they reach this point,
yeah,
it adds a sound file.
Exactly, and he totally just like narrates, but it's usually from the perspective of the particular block you're playing as at the time, and like the characters, inverted commas, is like a big square and a little square and a rectangle and a taller rectangle and a really small rectangle. That's the kind of characters you're working with. But
each one has different attributes. Like there's one, like the really big one that's a square can survive water, whereas the rest will die.
Yeah. And it's the way it's not really stereotypes or particular character traits, but a lot of these like characters portrayed by these like 2D shapes, along with the excellent narration, can totally be like transposed onto people you know in real life. Like, you kind of know someone. Like, I'd say like there's only like three characters there that I haven't met in real life. One of which thinks it's a wizard. One of which thinks it's a superhero, and the other one is a big rectangle who can jump real high. So he's a real jackass about it because he can jump higher than anyone else until he meets the wizard. It's great. I fell in love with the characters. It's got a kind of interesting twist. It's got a really cool like ramp up to the ending and a really like kind of touching ending to it. And yeah, it's just excellently done. Easy. I'd agree with Thurbleton that it's like, it's legitimately easy. Some of the inverted commas puzzles just involve you moving blocks to the correct place and you're done, essentially. But it's it's so charming that it totally makes up for it, and I totally agree with the pretty great reviews it's been getting. IGN gave it like Kez McDonald's, who's one of the cool UK editors, gave it like an 8.5 or something just recently on IGN, and I totally agree.
Only because we're about a month away, I will say anybody who is interested in it from either our opinions of it, or if they have friends or reviewers of it, I'd say wait a month, and it's probably going to be on sale for the Steam Summer Sale at least one day.
Yeah, very likely.
If you're getting it on PC, Vita, I'm not sure about that.
And if you're in the EU, you can get it for free on PlayStation Plus. Along with, now I didn't play this game this week, but I wanted to advertise it and shill it as much as I could. But on European PlayStation Plus, Catherine is for free right now, and considering that it's usually $89.99 Australian dollars on PlayStation Plus, and I can get it for free, hugely worth it. Like, it's if you're a European PlayStation Plus, get Catherine, get it. Just do it, because it's really divisive. A lot of people didn't like it, but a lot of people like myself really loved it. I thought it was absolutely freaking amazing.
It's just something that, like, it's, you feel everyone needs to experience either for or against.
Exactly. At least form an opinion about it, because it's, if you like it, it is so worth your time. And if you don't, then just, it's free. So that's like the perfect price to try something out and then put it away. But, it's like a legitimate, 15-hour experience or so, made by the Persona guys, so the guys at Atlus.
Wasn't it like in the Giant Bomb's Game of the Year, like top 10 or whatever?
It was in Patrick's, I think it might have been, but Jeff gave it a 2 stars. And as I said, it's very divisive, because I think it's like average Metacritic is like 75 or something, but like a bunch of people get it like 9 and 10 out of 10s, and a bunch of people gave it like 2 stars to like 3 out of 5 and that kind of sorry, 3 out of 10, that kind of stuff. So it really depends on how you approach that game. But it's like, that's the game, if you don't remember, that was about relationships and puzzles.
You could say relationships and puzzles. That's the way to describe Catherine. Exactly.
It's a block puzzle game where you're also playing a character named Vincent as he struggles through trying to grow up as a person whilst also being tempted at the same time by a particularly attractive vixen who he keeps going to his apartment late at night, getting drunk, and then waking up next to this woman, and he has no idea why. That's essentially it's a crazy story, crazy
twists. I have that problem every night.
Crazy girlfriends, interesting moral choices. It's one of those awesome games where it gives you moral choices and you get to see a graph directly after the moral choice as to what the general populace has been picking. So yeah, it's just it's totally awesome.
Yeah, more games that make you make choices need to do that. Like, that was one of the things I loved about The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, having played it way after everybody else, granted I still haven't finished it yet, I need to go back and do it.
Yep.
But having, you know, even started it much longer after everyone else had since set it down,
yeah,
it was really interesting then to like go back and see my decisions compared to, you know, what were kind of the popular choices and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't Mass Effect do something like that as well?
Did it? I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure, like, after Mass Effect 3, like, this was, I'd say, like, a month or so ago.
They released an infographic. Yeah, exactly. They did an infographic, which is kind of cool, but it's not the same.
That needs to be built into the game.
Yeah.
Like, so I want to see that, like, somewhere in the game.
Like, even if it's, like, you have to enable it in the options, or you can, like, go to a separate screen to see those percentages, I would love to see, like, how many people got with who. Like, I got with Jack because I'm a weirdo, and I want to see how many weirdos like me.
You're a weirdo. I was with Tally.
Well, I think Tally is actually pretty popular. I think quite a few people went with Tally.
I killed Tally in the end of Mass Effect 2.
That's because you're a monster.
No, because Tally is a disgusting foreigner with a dirty accent who deserves to die and is not a human.
I think you just like robots. Cerberus
when you have aliens. Yeah, noobs for Cerberus, which is
That explains him.
Yeah. So Thomas Was Alone, Catherine, and finally, I've been playing a shitload of Phoenix Wright, and I'm almost finished Phoenix Wright 3. I'm probably going to go straight into Phoenix Wright 4. So not Phoenix Wright 3, Ace Attorney 3, and I'm probably going to go into Ace Attorney 4 straight after this, because I'm just addicted to Trials at the moment. And even though I don't shout objection in real life, just hitting that button and then getting like the objection and then all the music and the badassery and crazy twist that happens directly after. I'm in love. I've forgotten how great those games were.
It's really the mystery thriller of like, you know, being like a detective, but instead you're being a lawyer and just, you know, working the case.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can see the allure for that.
Yeah, and to be clear, it's not a simulator. It's not like anything close to how the justice system works in any way whatsoever.
Do not become a lawyer.
It's an anime take on the justice system.
Exactly. Anime take on a fake Japanese justice system where cases have to be resolved within a time limit. And yeah, it's just amazing and stupid, and just like crazy stuff happens. Like, you get.
I want to see that as a box cover review. It's amazing and stupid.
Exactly. And it's like, for example, in one of the cases I just recently solved, I found out about the case because Phoenix Wright opens a magazine and sees an article talking about how he spectacularly lost a case last year with a picture of him in a case, but it's not him. It's a dude that's taller than him and has a full-on tan. And he's like, that's not me. And he has to represent the dude because it's obviously a mistrial. Yeah, it's great. Just stupid shit. Stupid, awesome is Phoenix Wright. And I totally recommend.
You think there are assholes out there who do really yell objection in real life?
I don't think so. Like, the one court case I've gone to in real life, like, objecting is actually pretty looked down
upon. Just like an asshole who just goes around being like, I play lots of Phoenix Wright. I don't want fries with that. Objection!
Well, considering that you exist. Throws
the fries, take that.
Yeah. Nice. It's like one of those people who interject Japanese words into their... repertoire.
When someone's like, when he's at Subway and they're spreading out the sauce, he goes, hold it! It's totally.
Okay, we need to move on to what Durin's been playing, because if we were in Mumble, they'd throw us in the penitentiary.
Yeah, yep.
All right, I do have a bit of a list of games here, so I'll try to quickly get through them.
Mm-hmm.
Starting off, I actually have been playing a little bit of Guild Wars 2, not as much as I had. Probably should,
right?
Especially because I have full disclosure, I haven't even touched the new dungeon. I need to do that since it'll be gone in a week.
I don't think we have anyone today who's touched the new dungeon. Doubles, have you done the new dungeon? I don't think anyone here has done the new dungeon.
Yes, I guess we'll talk about that in the second half.
Okay. But I basically, Cynic, I've picked up your habit of just going in and spectating.
Yeah. Yeah, straight.
And doing other things while I'm doing it.
Exactly.
Just occasionally looking for, and okay, there's another elementalist in this group. Let me go watch them for a little bit.
Absolutely.
What the hell is he using a scepter focus for? What the fuck is he doing? That's terrible.
And you get to pull up his traits to see what the fuck he's been doing with himself. Yeah, it's great. You can see why I loved it back
seriously,
in the day.
Elementalists, I literally found an elementalist who was running scepter focus in structured PvP.
I think the only time I've used a scepter focus, a focus, is to stop siege in War versus World.
Yeah, I did not understand what was happening. I thought
was
maybe
he doing
I had
well,
missed
though? Like, did he,
some
did
like
he
weird
kick meta- some ass?
No, it was structured.
Okay, he did bad.
He was doing structured. He did not do great. I was wondering at first if I had missed some weird metagame change. And no, it turned out he was just bad because everybody else was using either Scepter Dagger or Dagger Dagger.
But we'll definitely talk about that more in later in this episode because I have some thoughts and speculations as well.
So aside from that, I have been playing a bit more WoW. My Paladin is now up to level 61.
Yay.
What, 85 or 90?
90.
Oh, jeez.
The bad part is why I've kind of slowed down now is I've hit Outlands, which is basically the worst part of the game. Blizzard has said that they have considered ways of just allowing players to completely bypass that content entirely.
Just remember, because I really like the Outlands.
I loved it back then, but the game has come so far since then, and with the them remaking the old world in Cataclysm, re-upping those quests and making them a lot more modern, it just made Outlands feel that much worse. I'm just kind of trudging along through that and learning that the Alliance players like to just gank because they're terrible. So that's fun.
Horrid bastard. I know. I've always been, even though I don't play WoW, I'm an Alliance guy.
Although, I was always Alliance before. Aside from when I very, very first started the game, but I've always pretty much been Alliance. So my friends had all switched over to Horde. So I decided to do that as well. And honestly, Horde's better. Fuck Alliance is where all the kids play.
I think my friend said it best, and I've been quoting him ever since. I love everything about the Alliance except the players.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So, in other MMO gaming news, I've also been playing Neverwinter.
Tell me about Neverwinter, because I have no idea what the fuck
the game that's
for.
In open beta and yet also pretty much released.
Yeah, I mean, it's an open beta of a free-to-play game, so... You know,
everyone's playing it. What the fuck? It's crazy.
Yeah, it's actually become really, really popular. I mean, one thing about it is, it is, it's a cryptic game. So it's not like it's some, it is being published by Perfect World Entertainment, but it's not like it's some, Korean MMO that's just being released out here. It's a proper Western MMO. They're putting the work into it that should be put
it's
into
pretty
it.
Pretty racist. I'm Durin. I only accept Western MMOs.
I bought Terra, noob.
What's Terra?
Like a fucking ass.
No, that's nothing. I said enough about Noob's stance on this subject.
I just, like, for the briefest of seconds, I couldn't figure out if he was referring to Noob by name or by just like, hey, just listen calling up, you Noob. I got the game.
There are so many people playing Neverwinter on the PC Gaming Hub.
There are a lot of people playing Neverwinter, and I'm not playing on their server, and I'm pulling all Lincoln Force people who want to check out the game away from their server and putting them on mine instead. So let's play Neverwinter.
You bastard.
We're playing on Beholder because fuck Mind Flayer.
Oh.
I don't know what either of those things are.
Who's Mind Flayer?
There are three servers, Dragon, Mind Flayer, and Beholder.
Okay.
Dragon is
but
like
it's the worst. They're constantly playing it. They need to stop.
Like, Dragon is like where everybody's playing.
It's the coolest of the animals.
Well, it's because it's Dungeons and Dragons. Why would you not play on the Dragon server?
Yeah, what the fuck are you doing?
But the Dungeon server.
My mindset was that's going to be everybody. So I decided to pick Beholder instead. And guess what? I don't have server queues. People who are on Dragon are like number 200,000 in queue. So fuck you guys.
I'm going to play this game.
You picking a server that didn't have queues just blew my mind, if that's not a horrible pun.
God damn it.
What? I don't understand.
But Durin did, and that's the point.
But I didn't pick Mind Flayer I didn't pick Dragon because of that. So I picked Beholder. Mind Flayer is actually where the Giant Bomb Community Guild, I guess, is. I didn't find that out until afterwards. So
Mind Flayers are the lamest D&D like freaking enemies ever. Fuck Mind Flayers.
Beholders are pretty awesome. So
yeah, Beholders are awesome, cool. And you never fight dragons. So
yeah, so I know for a fact me and the Loopy Monkey are both playing on Beholder, mm-hmm. And some other people have also shown interest in also making some characters and putting them on there. But no, as for the game, like it's really good. It's like a kind of action combat, probably even more so really than. Guild Wars 2, so like it's a reticle based one, so you don't like mouse. So you're actually like aiming your hits and stuff. Left click to attack, like it basically uses like a like I would say probably heavily modified. I'm not really I'm not an expert on D&D, so I could be wrong here, but I know it uses some form of the version 4 D&D rule set.
Okay.
Wait, so like the standard, the daily, the encounter abilities and stuff.
Yeah, so basically you have the ones that are like your standard ones you're talking about are like your left and right click. Those are like non cooldown abilities.
Right.
You can use them. They're like on 1 second cooldowns basically.
Right.
So those are where your basic attacks are. So your basic attack is essentially going to be just mashing left click.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your encounter abilities, which are on Q, E, and R.
Okay.
And those are your cooldown abilities, generally like, 15, 20 seconds, whatever. And then you have your daily ability. Now, obviously, I said this is modified. So your daily ability is not actually what it is in D&D where
once a day.
In order to get daily ability in D&D, you have to actually like rest, essentially.
Yeah.
And then you get your ability again.
8 hours rest.
So in this, they've done instead is they've modified it to be action point based. So you gain action points through like doing damage, and I believe also taking damage, depending on the class you're playing, you'll gain action points differently.
Basically, things you'd be doing in fights.
Yeah, and when your action point meter fills up, then you have access to a daily ability, and you can have up to two once you've reached a certain level.
But they still call them dailies?
They still call them dailies.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Which it's a little weird, yeah. But from some people I've talked to, like, it does an okay job of having kind of the D&D-ish feel. And from what little Neverwinter Nights 2 I've played, I think it does an okay job at making it feel like a Neverwinter MMO. I think it does a better job of making it feel like a Neverwinter MMO than, like, say, Star Wars The Old Republic did about making that feel like a KOTOR MMO.
So, wait, what do you mean by it feels like a Neverwinter MMO?
Well, a lot of it is like you later on do get companions, so you have some companions rolling around with you. I'm playing a tank right now. I hired a cleric companion to follow me around, so I'm basically unstoppable.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, like the character interactions feel familiar or feel similar to what I remember of Neverwinter Nights 2, which again I didn't play a lot of. I maybe played like, I don't know, 8 hours of it or something.
Mm-hmm.
The world map definitely like has a Neverwinter kind of feel to it. It's like a magnifying glass over a certain portion of the map that you're looking at or whatever. Okay. There's some points to choose from. Like it's just the general feel, like the way the questing is, like you'll have some quests where you'll run around, like doing different like tasks or something, but they'll always eventually lead, like your quest chain will eventually lead you into a dungeon-esque thing, whether it be like in a basement somewhere or the sewers or a forest or what have you, that eventually culminates in a large boss fight. Once you kill the boss fight, you interact with something and that unlocks a chest right there at the end of the dungeon.
So those like instanced dungeons or are we still doing? Okay, good.
Yeah, those are instanced dungeons. And there are tons of them.
Having grown up on Guild Wars 1 and now living in the world of Guild Wars 2, I can totally still say that instanced like missions and stuff are my preference. Like, I prefer dungeons being instanced. I prefer like short story segments being its own thing without just random dudes running around. So I don't mind that. That actually sounds pretty cool.
See, I'm actually the other way around. I much prefer the like big sprawling open world, let me do what I want to do kind of thing. But for what this game is and what it's trying to be, it makes a lot of sense for them to do that. Like if they made a Dungeons and Dragons Neverwinter, which is what this is called, mm-hmm. if they made a Dungeons and Dragons Neverwinter MMO and did not have these instance dungeons in there, that wouldn't be Neverwinter.
I don't think dungeons work without instancing. That would be
Dungeons and Dragons.
Like, how does a dungeon work without instancing?
Well, right, but that's what I'm saying. They had to include these dungeons.
Yeah,
you couldn't just have like a WoW-esque MMO
exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
with Neverwinter. That wouldn't work.
Is it story driven? So like, how is the story? What's the story like for the game?
To be honest, I'm kind of skipping through a good chunk of it. Mm-hmm. But from what I've read of it, it's decent. The voice acting is okay. I don't recall exactly what the storyline itself is, other than like. Again, I'm kind of in the early goings, so a lot of it now is like people trying to overthrow the king of Neverwinter.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of things being called Never something.
Yep.
Okay. So, I mean, it seems decent. Like I said, I'm skipping through a lot of it because right. I don't generally care a lot about stories and MMOs. But they do a decent job of delivering the story. On what I would say is probably a lower budget. Like you're not having big cutscenes. There are some cutscenes, but they're not well produced. But it's what you would kind of expect out of a free to play MMO.
Wait, is this supposed to be free to play, or is it just because it's beta?
Yes. No, it's going to be 100% free to play.
Oh,
but not even from what I'm aware of. Like it is straight up free to play.
I might actually check that out then.
That sounds interesting. Yeah, there are some Founders things you can buy right now that are ending soon. That give you different bonuses. There's like a $20 one, a $60, and then the top one, which is a $200 one, which does get you a pretty sweet spider mount, but that's
yeah, okay.
Spider mount.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, like I believe at release, this is going to be 100% free to play, similar to all of, you know, Perfect World. That's the business they're in is free to play MMOs. So yeah, I mean, it's actually like all around, it's a really solid MMO. It's a lot better than I expected it to be. As you know, I've been playing a lot of like newly released free to play MMOs lately, and most of them really bad.
Yep.
So I was actually really impressed by this one. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that says about this game, or maybe just the quality of free to play MMOs that have been coming out.
Right.
But no, I would actually definitely recommend checking it out.
Cool.
And one more time, what server is that on? Beholder?
No, wait. Before Durin plugs his server, the Giant Bomb Guild is in fact called the Order of Icewind Dave. So I don't know.
Nice.
You might want to go in the Giant Bomb Guild
in homage to Dave Snyder, who has recently left GiantBomb.com because he has a kid. So that's cool.
He'll be back.
I hope so.
Loopy and I are both playing on Beholder, but again, like we aren't a big group of people. It is two of us that I know of right now.
Wait, so it's just two? Okay.
Well, there are others that showed interest, but we were like he straight up like deleted the character to switch over to this server.
Okay.
So there will most likely be more. But aside from Neverwinter, I've also played. I finished the third campaign and the final like normal campaign of Resident Evil 6. And
why are you still playing this game?
Because my friend bought it for me for us to stream together.
Oh, god damn it. So it's like you have an obligation to play it.
Kinda. Well, I will say the third campaign was actually pretty decent. It wasn't It wasn't as good as the first one, but it definitely wasn't as terrible as the second one.
All right.
Okay. However, that said, there is a fourth campaign where you play as Ada Wong. Mm-hmm. We started that campaign. We played probably maybe 20 or 30 minutes of that campaign, and we decided we are done with Resident Evil 6. Because well, that campaign...
Congratulations.
It took you that how many hours to figure out you're done with Resident Evil 6?
Let's see. Let me
well, he played the whole base game. Like, he played all of it.
Yeah. 20 hours.
That's crazy.
Nice.
20 hours of
cherished memories with your friends on Twitch.
So if you want to see us play through that game, because don't play it yourself, it's at twitch.tv/Durin. I did lose part 3 because I forgot to save the file before Twitch deleted it.
Yep.
Because they do that. Mm-hmm. So that I believe that was part of Chris's campaign, so you're not really missing much. But no, like the fourth campaign, the reason, just real quickly, like why we decided not to continue it, aside from we were just fucking done with Resident Evil, is it was originally a single player campaign that they patched co-op into.
Yeah.
Oh, so it was never designed for any sort of co-op. That's great.
So second player plays as Agent.
Mm-hmm.
And
what the fuck is the model?
It's basically a like you know those like in Resident Evil games the dudes that like have like the gas mask looking masks.
Oh,
on.
That's lazy. That is.
You played as an inept guard.
Yeah, yeah. Who looks a lot like the fucking enemies too? By the way,
nice.
In that campaign.
Nice.
So the other problem is that the campaign is at least the beginnings of it are largely stealth based, which is really hard to do with two players. Even with voice comms. The other big problem is when they patched in co-op into that campaign, they forgot to patch in or just neglected to patch in the ability for that co-op partner to actually interact with anything.
Oh, wow. Whatsoever. Holy shit.
So he basically just kind of had to stand around while I did everything. And just
Agent doesn't know how to push a button. That's an Ada Wong skill.
Yeah, but apparently. So
that sounds terrible.
It's real fucking bad. Like that campaign is a pile of shit.
So when you started playing Resident Evil 6, you're talking smack about you didn't really see where reviewers are coming from. Where's your stance now?
I still feel like that if you pick up that game for $20 or less, you can still get your money's worth out of it.
$20? Really?
Because that first campaign is actually really good and is about 8 hours long.
And by first you mean
Leon's campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get the majority of the story from that. Like, I mean, you get the overall story from all three of them. So, like, there are, like, minor story beats that you'll get from each different campaign that you didn't see in the others. But really, like, not enough to warrant playing through Chris's campaign.
Would you say that if someone was to play Resident Evil 6 and stop after Leon's campaign, he'd have a better experience?
Yeah. I mean, if you really wanted more Resident Evil 6, for whatever reason, you could play through Jake's campaign. His was actually pretty decent too. It was kind of, it was kind of actiony like Chris's was, but wasn't terrible like Chris's was. So it's definitely still worth playing through, and you get a little bit more information about him and his past and stuff. So yeah, I would say, you know, if you happen to fall into that game, for whatever reason, play through Leon and Jake and then just walk away.
Cool. Awesome.
Run.
All right. Is there anything else you've been playing this week? Or
There are two more, actually. I'll try to make these short.
Well, list them, we'll pick. List the two, and we'll pick which ones you want to talk about.
All right. I've got Monaco and Game Dev Tycoon.
Monaco, easily.
Monaco. Dev Tycoon. I've heard all enough right. Fucking Monaco.
Okay. Let's flip the fucking script.
Monaco, and then I'll go to Game Tycoon. Monaco is basically Ocean's 11 meets the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
When you're playing in multiplayer, it's fucking great. Like I could not recommend that game enough.
It's four people, not 11 or three.
Yeah, it is four people.
Yeah,
up to four people. You can play with one, two, three, or four. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
However, it is almost indecipherable if you're trying to watch someone play it. I have no idea.
Yes,
that is not a spectator's game at all. Yeah. I'm not even.
Which is weird because it's constantly being streamed, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
I'm not streaming that game because I'm not a fucking
crazy person.
Idiot.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Hey, you guys want to come in watch me play Monaco? Is what I've been hearing.
So, Game Dev Tycoon is an interesting game, I think.
It is. So, anybody who has an iPhone has probably heard of
Game Dev Story.
Dev Story,
yeah.
Which this definitely takes inspiration from, I guess, is the nice way to say it.
Nice.
It might wholly lift a lot of its concepts from that game.
Sure.
But that's not to say that it's just a ripoff game that's just, you know, taking their stuff and trying to make a quick buck on it. Mm-hmm. They actually do go quite a bit more in depth into a lot of things that Game Dev Story didn't. There's a lot more like player control over the actual like process of the development. So like there are three stages to each to developing a game, and at each stage like there it gives you like three sliders that you'll kind of decide like how much focus you want to spend on like gameplay and level design and AI, and like the three will kind of be, you know, essentially you're deciding like from a, you know, 10-point scale like how much of each of these you want to spend time with.
Yep.
You need, like, you can balance them, you know, third, or you can maybe bring, you know, like, let's say you're making a simulation game, you're probably going to bring like story and quests down because who the fuck needs a simulation?
Yep.
Like, those decisions make a difference.
Also, what I've seen is it's also like you start off like pre SNES days, and yeah, so it's
PC, Commodore 64.
It's having to figure out, okay, do I want to, like, I know metagame that this new console is coming out soon. I want to hold off from working on a new engine until this is announced, so the new like indie game I make will be on this engine and all that. So there's a bit of strategy to it as well.
Yeah, so like one mistake that I made in the game that I'm currently playing is I made a new game engine months before the Nintendo TES was released.
The course of the game will like span like decades, right?
The game,
like the indie game or dev game tycoon.
Yeah, it spans 30 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Shit.
So a few months is a pretty short time.
Yeah. So the problem I had with that is that now I have this game engine. I can make Nintendo TES games, but I don't have gamepad support. So I'm not sure how that works. But basically, you know, those games aren't selling super well.
Yeah, I could assume why they wouldn't be selling very well.
Yeah.
I
like so, it. But a flight sim on the PC sold like gangbusters. So, nice. You know, whatever. So yeah, like you'll have your platform choices. You can actually, you know, develop your own game engines. You'll have like you can research like marketing and stuff. Research like, you know, target demographics. So it definitely goes way above and beyond what Game Dev Story does. But the biggest reason why this game's probably, you know, been in the news a bit lately is, you know, like a lot of especially indie PC games, this game was obviously pirated out the ass. Like there was like some ridiculous 90-something% piracy rate, which is
Jesus.
So the developers decided to like kind of they decided to take an interesting approach to it. So what they basically did is they rewrote their own version of the game with some extra lines of code in it and then released that cracked version of the game on Pirate Bay.
Yep.
And so anybody who downloaded the game via that Pirate Bay crack got a version of the game that was rampant with piracy. So piracy is in the game. Like even if you have a legit copy, you do run into piracy. However, these cracked versions that people got, instead of just having, you know, kind of occasional piracy problems,
that's fucking awesome.
We're selling like a AAA title that normally would make them like millions. They instead were barely in the green, sometimes still in the red, just because of the ridiculous piracy.
Wow.
Stuff. Before
you could get to the end of the game, like even near the end of the game, you would be just like so financially in debt because of piracy that you couldn't.
Yeah. So like you saw these there's some some pictures going around the internet about this where some people were on forums asking for tips for advice. You know, how do I deal with this? How, you know, every time I make a AAA title, it sells, you know, like shit because of this piracy rating. But if I make like a, you know, a B or C game, then I can still make an okay profit on it. What's going on? Like one person even asked, like, is there a way to research DRM?
Wow.
It's just like
smart.
In an interview, the one of the developers, I believe it's like a 2-man team. One of the developers said that like seeing these reactions like as a gamer was just fucking hilarious.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
But as a game developer, just made him want to cry.
Yeah, man.
So after seeing that those articles and stuff, I went and checked out the demo and it seemed pretty okay. The game's like $8. You can buy it directly through their website via like PayPal or something. And went and downloaded that. And actually, I didn't start playing the actual proper game until today. And I'm fucking hooked. That game is great.
Nice. Cool.
And it'll run on anything, right? Because it's essentially...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. If you have a Windows 8 machine, it's on the Windows 8 Marketplace. Cool. But if you don't, you just go to their website and buy it directly.
How is
the
Does Windows it have Marketplace? Oculus Rift support?
Does not have Oculus Rift support.
I'm interested.
It's not a true indie game, apparently.
Wait, do you have Windows 8?
No.
Oh, okay, cool. All right. Okay, cool. I was going to ask how the Windows 8 Marketplace is going, but I don't know. We should probably move on, right?
Yep. New Brahma. Anything you've been playing this week?
Shit. Give me
asshole
a second. All right. I'm prepared. I did it.
I will just go over what I've been playing this week, and I will probably make you amazed. Similar to what Durin, like a little tip of the hat to what Durin did earlier with how he has a flight sim that was selling like gangbusters. I tried dusting off some old games to figure out, do I want to play something with a helicopter. Because after watching a couple videos, in the Battlefield days, I would love to just be the guy in the helicopter ferrying people because it was fun just to do the combat landing and take off. So I booted up PlantSide 2, stared at the loading, the create a character screen, and then closed that down again.
Nice.
And instead played the Arma 3 Alpha.
Wait. Why did you close?
So as somebody who's not an Arma nut, how is it? I don't really want Noob's opinion on it.
Flying a helicopter is a lot tougher than normal, and it's really hard to see people.
Nice. But wait, why would you? So why'd you pretty much like Arma 2. What's wrong with PlantSide?
Okay.
What happened? With
I just like I don't know anything about the game, and I don't know I probably should research where the giant bomb what server they're on.
If they still
exist. It was just the whole I don't know where I need to start on this trip to get to the top of this mountain.
Wait, is it complex? I haven't started playing. I've already just seen.
It's not complex, but from what I've heard, just like with any other game, it's unless I want to end up in a giant Zerg ball with similar to World versus World, I want to find a group of people possibly on a voice channel or just join their raid guild clan thing. And just find a way to group up with people and communicate.
Right.
And I couldn't be bothered at fair. 8 a.m.
But with Arma 3, pretty much half the PC gaming hub constantly plays it. So
yeah, I couldn't find any other server either. So I just ended up playing the helicopter simulator and flying that around a bunch.
Oh, okay.
Flying helicopters is hard in that game.
Not really.
Are you using a gamepad?
I'm just using the keyboard, which is what I would always use for Battlefield or... It's pretty much the only flight helicopter sims I would play.
Right.
You have to make good use of the autopilot.
I didn't know there was an autopilot, but
there you go.
Yeah. Oh, auto landing.
I take that back. I can land it fine. It's flying while shooting at something.
That you always have to keep a high altitude and not dip too low.
New Brahma, I don't think this is actually helping because these are basic instructions to how to fly a helicopter.
You want to not crash.
If you're spinning around real fast, just don't. Stop doing that. Asshole.
Anyway, the other game I played this week that will probably make Cynic sad was I did play Counter-Strike Go.
Oh,
yeah. I've been playing some Counter-Strike Go recently.
Make him sad. I don't like that game.
I'm not surprised. I totally went up to him and was like, hey, so I'm going to buy you, what was it, Mark of the Ninja, but you have Counter-Strike Go on your wish list. Do you want Mark of the Ninja or do you want PlantSide Go? Counter-Strike Go. He's like, oh, no, I'll probably end up playing Counter-Strike Go more. I'm like, okay. And I just go for it.
Well, I've already looked up, invested in the story and the gameplay of Mark of the Ninja through videos.
Ah, yes.
So I know all about that.
Mm-hmm.
With CSGO, the main reason, here's the number one reason, and it's a really dumb reason, there's no scout.
There is a scout. What are you talking about?
Not in any of the maps I played. There's a scout-like weapon, but it behaves differently than the scout.
What do you mean?
The time to look in your scope is slower.
the main thing with the scout compared to the AWP was that you can move and shoot at the same time. It was mobile sniper rifle.
It doesn't randomly shoot without scoping.
It bobs the camera screen.
What do you mean? Jumping around.
No, I was just strafing. I was getting head bob, and I was like, okay, well, this is a lot harder to shoot. I should just stick with the AWP and stand still with a giant hand cannon.
I like this because Nubarama has forgotten that these are very similar to his complaints when he first started playing CSGO. Asshole.
No, my problem with CSGO is they removed silencers off of M4s, first of all.
You asked. I was there like the first hour you played CSGO, and he's like, oh, the movement's all weird. Oh, the look is all weird. This is weird. I hate this game.
Yeah, I do actually remember that.
Yeah. No, I sort of don't like CSGO because if I wanted to play Counter-Strike, I'd play Source still.
Nice. Yeah, I still really enjoy Source. There's still a pretty good community in there.
With the tournament mode and everything, I think CSGO is a lot more viable to play. Mm. Like, it's worth playing now. If it didn't feel weird and look weird and wasn't Counter-Strike Source.
But it doesn't, like, scratch the itch of Counter-Strike, I guess.
No, it does. It does. Well,
it's that and the aiming for Counter-Strike original to, like, 1.4 or whatever to CS Source.
1.6.
Yeah. Well, it was still, like, a pretty easy transition. The guns behave the same way.
6 to Source. There's a reason why people are still playing 1.6.
Because you can shoot through walls and stuff.
Yeah.
No, not that. It's simply shooting is completely different between Source and 1.6. That's why 1.6 players are still so adamant on 1.6 and people complain, oh, shooting in Source is shit. And then, of course, when Go comes out, everyone's like, shooting in Go is shit. But
see, the only thing I remember being like way dramatically different between Source and 1.6 was the grenade throwing. Like, that it was better in Source.
I don't know.
I don't remember anything about 1.6.
Grenade throwing is really tricksy to do in CS in Source.
Man, fuck Source.
No.
Grenades are easy in Source. The physics grenades are so easy.
You're thinking of 1.6, Thurb. In 1.6, like, remember, like, he would do the throwing animation? Yeah, he would do the throwing animation, and then the grenade would just kind of appear. Yeah. And, yeah, it would just kind of float. There was no, like, actual physical gravity.
And the bouncing looks really weird because there was no real physics.
No, in Source, it's incredibly easy to bounce.
You could, like, bounce it off walls and have a perfect idea of where it's going to land.
Yeah.
Yes, but like if you're just jumping into the game and you don't know how the grenades, like it's not necessarily how the grenades behave, but how the grenades behave when you're running a certain direction.
What do you mean?
So if I'm running like,
I run when I throw grenades, maybe that's why.
Oh yeah, well I do. It's and like let's say I'm running forward and diagonally left.
I think I'm seeing what your overall issue here is you are trying to play run and gun in Counter-Strike.
What? Yeah. That's exactly how I played Counter-Strike.
You always stop when you're pressing a movement key. You guys are insane.
In 1.5, I would not stop for nothing. It would just be constant movement and shooting at the same time.
What gun were you using?
I forgot what it's called.
For like a TMP?
I'm usually in Steer Arg or whatever they called it back then in that game, or the terrorist equivalent.
The Krieg.
Yeah, that's me. And I just no stop for fucking nothing. So I'm totally with Thurbs, man.
That was always M4.
Yeah, M4 AK, you always WS for AD. Like, you always stop and shoot. Otherwise, you're not going to get very good headshots.
I like guns with scopes. I don't know, man. But I don't like freaking sniper rifles.
It isn't even a scope. You just fucking zoomed your camera in.
Yeah. Anyway.
Let's move on. So that's pretty much the two games I've been playing. Nubarama, have you thought of anything that you've been playing this week? And of course, Guild Wars, but we'll get to that later.
Fuck.
Yeah, we need to talk
about
that too.
I disagree with Noob.
Yeah, what? You guys suck.
Skyrim. I've been playing Skyrim, I guess. I ended up bending in and then cheating, but it was like a little bit of cheating, so it was okay, is what I told myself, but it probably wasn't. Because I'm running around with legendary gear at level.
How that mindset works once you're, you know, in a relationship sometime. No, it's cool. It was just a little bit of cheating.
Wait, Durin, you're assuming that Nubarama will ever have a girlfriend.
You talking about it doesn't have to be mutual. One way is okay.
Sure. Well, I don't think it's cheating if whatever. Let's just move on.
What is it called? Right. So
Stalker.
So it's like,
I mean, it's, well, Noob Rama, the main reason why you were wary of cheating before was that as soon as you like opened up the con, like the dev console and then spawned something, you instantly got bored of the game, right?
Yeah. But so because I'm like, oh, I don't want to grind. I don't want to grind smithing. So I set smithing to 250. And yeah, it's sort of weird running around with like full legendary armor, but I still have to unlock the perks and I die since I've set it difficulty over normal.
Okay.
So I guess I've justified it for myself.
Well, you also play two-handed sword, which is probably the easiest, the second easiest way to play that game. But also
magic.
You need to actually be pretty on your toes with two-handed weapons in Skyrim.
Yeah. You have to be able to block.
Yeah. I'm totally
fucks you really hard.
Exactly. Because I played how I think is the best way to play the game, which is magic left hand, sword main hand, or one-handed weapon main hand. That, yeah, I just destroyed everything.
You play shield and magic?
I played shield. Well,
conjure weapon magic.
At the end of the game, I had shield. I could do anything. I could dual wield. I could shield magic. I could magic. I could.
Yeah, at the end of the game, you're just a walking god.
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter. But at the start of the game, I was magic.
Hearing that, and that makes me really feel like I need to go ahead and keep playing that game because that sounds so awesome.
It is so good.
I'm so early in the game that, like, right now, I can barely. I can barely cast like the simplest of spells. And
when you start getting to the point when you're like, okay, I'm switching to dual magic for a second, and then you switch back to sword and board, and it's really great. Like that game really shines when you get to like mid game and late game. As long as you should know though,
while the main story does have an ending, mm-hmm. the game does not end.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
That's my main story ending. Just to make sure you're aware of that.
8 hours into that game, I'm probably like 20 minutes into the story.
Okay.
Yeah. To be fair, I have 100-something hours in Skyrim, or probably more. And what is it called? I've never finished the storyline because I've never like. Probably because it has to do with me cheating and then starting over, telling myself don't cheat, and
the
then
main
cheating.
Story is actually pretty good. Like aside from the Daedric missions, I think the main story in Skyrim is pretty solid. Like the reason to play that game. Because
God damn it, Skyrim.
Because what's his face? Like the Assassin's Guild, I forget what they're called. Dark Brotherhood? They're nowhere near as fun in Assassins as they sorry,
I
in
really
Skyrim's
love
line.
The Imperial Stormcloak thing though. Too bad it's so short.
It's alright. I really like I suppose the Thieves Guild's really great. I still haven't touched them because my character was a goody two shoes. So I never did the Thieves stuff. But the magic one is okay. It's not bad.
The College of Winterhold.
The College. But I think the best thing in that is actually the
main
story.
Daedric.
Aside from the Daedric and Thieves Guild is the main story. You should totally play the game. It's really awesome.
Yeah. Also, I tried playing. All right. Today was the May the 4th sale. Because, like.
Yeah, May the 4th be with you guys.
Is that why? Is that literally why?
Yeah, what? May the 4th be with you.
That's terrible. That's why Star Wars is being discounted.
Yeah.
Or was a couple days ago for me.
Yeah, it's tomorrow for you.
Well, it's yesterday, sorry.
It was yesterday.
Yeah. It's May 5th now.
So I ended up buying... What did I buy today? Battlefront 2, which I already own on PS2.
Nice.
Republic Commando, which I already own on disc. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I bought Empire at War... Which I also
looked at that one.
And I really hated that game, but I bought it again, and I'm not sure why. And I tried to play it, but they ran out of CD keys, so I couldn't even hate the game because I'm just sitting here like wanting to play it. Battlefront 2 holds up pretty well, still a great game. Republic Commando holds up fairly well.
So how Empire do you feel knowing you just gave all that money to Disney?
I know. I want them to create the next Battlefront 3
I like Disney.
You guys have seen the Battlefront 3 canceled footage, right?
Are there still people playing Battlefront 2 servers?
I didn't check.
Because that's why I want to play it. Like, I want to play it for that. I don't want to play it by myself.
Yeah. We could always host... Oh, like, there could always be a game night because there's a lot of people in this now. And I guess I've been watching a lot of more 24.
This is weird. I just saw Star Wars on Steam, and the first two hits ever arranged my Metascore are Mass Effect 2. Like, what?
Sci-fi, I guess. Like,
well, yeah, there's wars up in the stars in that game, so yeah, that makes sense.
What is happening?
Yeah, if you watch 24 back to back, season after season, that shit gets bad.
Does it?
Not bad. Just every time you see any character that's not Jack Bauer, it tends to be like, because it's just so stupid where you see Jack Bauer just getting brutally tortured, and then it just cuts to the scene of a love story in the office, and you're like, "What are you doing?
Wait, but
Jack's dying out there.
You're still in the seasons where it's the black president and his wife, right?"
Yeah, that's season one and two, but like,
wasn't the first couple, because the wife is like a super bitch, isn't she? I remember hating her.
To be fair, she's like one of the only like non stupid female characters that misogynistic writers of 24 seem to write in
until the next like, president.
Jack's daughter is the dumbest. I don't know.
She goes from dumb to, because at least in the first one, she wasn't that dumb because she just didn't have much screen time. In the second season.
Time and like because of that, well, to be fair, in the first one she does nothing, she just is there exactly. She's like, oh, I can't act. In the second one she just gets into all kinds of fucking shit. I hate stupid characters.
Exactly. She had more screen time in the second and she was just worse like, because of it.
I just want there to be one episode where she just fucks up and hundreds of millions of people die because she's like, God, Daddy, I need you right now. Fuck. But it's great because
I guess we should move on to Guild Wars 2.
But it's great.
Yeah. I didn't realize we were talking about things that we watched. I did watch Scream 4 today.
I don't know. I think we've derailed this podcast now. We probably start heading back towards those tracks.
On that bumpshell of Scream 4.
With Scream 4, Kiefer Sutherland, and other MMOs beyond this MMO podcast. I haven't seen her on podcast. Like,
or television since Heroes ended.
So there's been like we said last week's podcast, a lot of new things with this new patch. Mm-hmm. Chief of which was the new dungeon, I believe. Have any of you slackers been able to play it?
Nope, not interested.
Nope. So we'll talk about it another week then.
I'm definitely interested. I will play it before the next podcast.
Okay.
I will say my one complaint with it seems
you
like
you should talk about it because we haven't talked about it yet. You should just tell us. I mean, about it.
We haven't talked about I never made it to the very end. We got to the final boss fight, and then the boss's attacks were larger and happened before the red circles appeared. So they were like, you could get damaged outside the red circle, and you could get damaged when there wasn't even a red circle there.
I do know one thing about that dungeon, that when it launched, it was broken and you couldn't enter. So that's sweet. Great.
Yeah. Good times.
But is it? What's the general reaction like? Do people like it?
Apparently people seem to enjoy it. It's definitely a smaller dungeon, but mm-hmm. it's jam-packed, like almost you're fighting every foot of the way, it would seem.
That sounds like the opposite of why I like dungeons.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Well, are you fighting like trash, or are you fighting like bosses?
Trashy bosses?
Oh, so is this what we were describing? Just, the veteran level champions?
Yeah.
It's like you're fighting to like rescue these hostages, like, you know, these prisoners, and so it's like a mini boss veterans every single pack. Yeah. And it might have just been the group I was with made it like seem longer than it took, but it definitely seemed to drag on to the end where it's like, I just want to finish this.
So there's no are there any interesting mechanics or like any cool new
definitely. There's really fun boss fights in there. Like it's one is this whole like square boss room that you have to just avoid this guy's traps before you can fight him.
Okay.
And the final boss fight is definitely it seems like a fun fight. It's just that we couldn't tell when we were getting damaged until it was too late. And the other issue was whenever we went to respawn, we would get teleported right back to the boss room, so we couldn't change our skills or weapons.
Wow, okay, right.
And that was a bit of a bug. If we had ended up having to like teleport further into the dungeon and to make it work, but
all right.
Definitely a rocky road for a new dungeon that we're all going to miss out at the end of the month. So definitely get some friends together and give that a shot.
Not even at the end of the month, like the 12th.
Oh, okay, sweet.
12th is the last day for this dungeon.
You serious? It's a two-week dungeon?
Yep.
Yeah, the other thing I want to mention is it definitely seems like this is not the end of the story. Like, they have something else planned in the second half of the month.
Great!
I don't say of Karka Legends, but I don't know. It just seems like this is not the ending of this chapter. But the other thing, I guess you guys did a lot of Spectator stuff. And
can me and Durin wax philosophic about Spectator mode?
It seemed like you guys were itching to talk about that.
So this is going to be – this is essentially the rest of the show. Do we have anything else to talk about before we get to here?
Wait. Before, I do want to mention that today – or earlier this week, I did read a nonfiction book, and I sort of want to talk about it because it was quite good.
Fiction.
Sorry, not nonfiction.
Noob Rama read fiction?
Okay, noob, is this something real or not real?
It's not real. That would be
fiction then.
Okay, what'd you read?
So Chuck Palahniuk, who is, do you guys know him? He wrote Fight Club, Choke, and a bunch of other really great novels like Dark Humor, Dark Satire, and stuff like that. And the book I read was Pygmy. And like generally why I read fiction books is more because like the premise sounds interesting, but I guess that's why everyone reads fiction books. So never mind.
Yeah, it's the definition almost.
Yeah, so the plot of this story is like you will understand why I picked this book. So these children come to the United States for exchange program for 6 months from this very hardcore Stalinist communist country like North Korea or like Stalinist Russia. And so they're on this exchange program to the United States, but they're secretly terrorists planning on terrorist attacks.
God damn it.
While embedded in their families. But the book, some people don't like it because the entire book is written in broken English with like weird.
Oh, weird.
Imagine just an Asian person who's learns like typical communist English and they're talking about like imperialist aggressors. So like maybe it's because I listen to a lot of Asian people who don't speak English that I'm completely fine with reading the book. But a lot of people seem to have trouble. But if you're into really dark humor and you can get past that sort of writing, it is enjoyable. It is very enjoyable. It is quite disgusting at some times. It's quite graphic.
PYGMY, right?
Of
Pygmy?
Pardon?
PYGMY. Pygmy, yeah. So it's got a 3 stars on Goodreads, which is kind of interesting.
All of the readers are complaining about the writing style, I think. But yeah, it's hilarious. It's like political satire, but not really too politically charged.
Half of these reviews are people complaining about the English. Okay. Yeah. I see where you're coming from.
Huh. All right. Yeah. Well, just
so it's interesting.
Thank you.
I highly recommend it. If you're not into rape, then maybe not. But
what?
Wait, what?
Spoilers for the people. I want to do this because
you ass.
One of the things about this book that it's the most graphic part of this book. Spoilers. If you don't want to hear it, skip what? To.
No. Are you about to like read?
You're not reading that on here. No.
I'm just describing
from this call.
I'm just describing what happens.
No.
Considering that this is the Guild Wars 2 segment of this podcast, we should probably talk about fucking Guild Wars 2.
But it's really interesting.
No, all right. So
No. Anyway,
Spectator mode.
What else is interesting, but not on that same topic. Oh, this is the worst segue ever.
Damn it.
Guild puzzles.
No. We're definitely going to do them. Oh, okay, wait. Are we going
to
talk about Guild Puzzles first or then Spectator Mode?
Yeah, Guild Puzzles, and then you guys can finish this off with Spectator Mode.
All right, sure.
Because this is something I'm actually really curious about. When the game launched, people seemed to love the jumping puzzles and the mini dungeons that were out in the world.
Wait, people like jumping puzzles?
Some people apparently like jumping puzzles.
You know what they say about assumption? You're an asshole.
No, that's not
it? Okay, no, sorry. It's
but people like jumping puzzles so much, Cynic, that they made the Super Adventure Box, which a lot of people like, yourself included.
I like Noob sometimes.
God, this train is just, it's off the tracks, and just, we fell on the cliff already.
Okay, so...
Guild puzzles are effectively gated mini dungeons that are really cleaned up and really well done, but they're gated.
What do you mean by gated?
And you have to have it unlocked with your guild and activate it.
Oh, okay.
And
sure.
The gate only opens within the, like, you know, you must complete this, you know, guild puzzle within 20 minutes sort of thing.
Okay.
But they're really well done, really, like, you know, puzzly elements, different sections. One of them is just this giant maze that has destructible walls in some sections. And, like, it's really well done. I guess we'll get better in context when we can get Shinboy or Riven or one of the guys who actually did the dungeon to talk about it.
But he did stream it, so you can check it out on Shinboy's stream of twitch.tv/Shinboy630, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not Shinboy. Somebody else claimed that.
So it's essentially, is it mainly navigation or is there combat or how long?
There is combat. There's navigation. There's trying to find stuff and like and carry it to other areas. Like I think one of them is you have to charge a battery, and if you pick up the battery, the Skrit will try to knock it out of your hands.
Oh, great.
And so you need to have somebody else in the group throw shinies at them to keep them busy.
Me and Noob effort. Just reacted the same way in that, not to take this too far off topic, but the fact that Flame and Frost has so much to do with the Dredge and this has so much to do with the Skrit makes me not be able to wait for Tengu and actual races that I care about to be put back in Tokyo Wars 2.
Well, that was just one of them. That's one of the two puzzles.
Yeah.
It's just some Skrit.
Because, man, when we can play as Coden, we can fight more Coden. When we can fight more Tengu and play as Tengu, that's going to be awesome. Can't wait.
Oh, anyway. Don't fight the Coden.
Oh.
Why? They're bears. Bears are meant to be killed.
But they're assholes as well.
What has me worried about this is seeing stuff like them putting development into the Super Adventure Box means they're not putting – like they're putting those resources away from – more jumping puzzles in the open world.
Mm-hmm.
Then putting resources into guild puzzles, and don't get me wrong, I love those. I would love to see more of them, but that would mean they aren't adding more openly available, not gated, in the open world.
Well, yeah, we are only able to access the guild puzzle because we like jumped on another guild's puzzle.
Yeah, we jumped on the guild. We'll eventually be able to unlock it, but still, that means we'll only be able to do it once a week and only in this certain time, and not like, oh, hey, we're running through these zones having a good time with the Saturday night shenanigans that we do, just the PvE, like, we break events and make it spawn, like, 20 more than it's supposed to, and we just kill them instantly.
Right.
We usually end those by doing a mini dungeon. But we've done all the ones that are available now.
Wow.
Okay. I have a question.
What's up?
Can you not make multiple guilds and then do guild puzzles every day? Or nearly.
Theoretically, you could do that, but you have to unlock them, and it would take, like, I'm just guessing 500,000 influence, not to mention merits.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, you have to...
It requires so much activity in every single guild for that to be possible.
You have to have, like, tier 6 unlocked.
No, I mean, like, each person is in the same 5 guilds in every guild.
I realize. Right,
because you only get influence for
that much influence.
Essentially, what you'd be doing is you'd be fifthing the amount of
influence
that each person is bringing into each guild.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're then bringing in, like, you're cutting down the activity you're doing in your guild, because then you have to switch over to this other guild so they get enough influence and so on.
Wait, so this is instanced, is it?
No. The guild challenges might be instanced, but everything else is open world that anybody can participate in, but until it's activated, it's locked.
That's so weird. Why? That's
why open world?
No,
why?
So it's in the open world, but you can't access it unless you've turned it on, flip the switch. Sorry.
So yeah,
That's so.
I think the reason why they did that is because, otherwise, since there's only two guild puzzles, you could just have everyone fight their way to the end before even activating it, and then hit the activate key and instantly get it finished. So there is a reason for them to gate it, but zooming out meta wise, why do this in the first place?
Yeah.
Like, I understand it makes a really good mission, mm-hmm. but I would love to just have this as a regular mini dungeon.
Yeah.
And just take the guild through on like a Wednesday and a Saturday or something.
But then you kind of falls back on your other argument where you guys have already done all the mini dungeons in the game. This would just be two more mini dungeons, and then you'd be finished those, and then that's it, right?
Yes, but then let's say I have some friends that join the game, and then I show them that as well.
Okay.
Like, I still like taking people. Like, I took some friends who started playing the game again after like a 3-month hiatus. I took them through the Demon Grub pits in it's a jumping puzzle in the human starting zone.
Hmm.
So that's fun. I guess, what is your guys' opinion? Would you like to see more guild missions, or the reason why I don't like Skyrim is because everything is this will tie back, like each cave has a quest to it.
Yeah.
Whereas with Guild Wars, some of the like the jumping puzzles or like some of the areas don't even have anything associated with them off the bat, and they've slowly been adding to them.
Man, don't make me compare Skyrim to Guild Wars 2 because, man, some of those caves in Skyrim were so memorable and so awesome. And even though they barely had any storytelling to them, they were actually really well executed in their own stories and their own ways. So I don't even really know how you compare them because in Guild Wars 2...
The idea of just a massive world with lots of caves.
Yeah. Like
Diablo 2?
It would be crazy to see.
Comparing Guild Wars 2 to Neverwinter Nights, where every cave is an instance dungeon.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. If we step away from this particular argument, I'd say that, in my opinion, this isn't how I would add guild content, personally, because when it comes to actually adding new pieces of things for everyone to do, I would have just put these in the world. I'm the person who says, like, even though I don't like the way they've executed on it, the way that guilds' hunts work is closer to how I would like group guild content to work.
Guild bounties, you mean? Where
yeah,
we hunt down?
Yeah.
Okay, exactly. Yeah, okay.
Because it's using what's already in the world and allowing you to play with that, whereas the other stuff they've added has been, like, the Guild Rush, whatever it's called, would have been better if it was just like part of the game. If those are there since the beginning, I would have had fun with them. Like I would have perhaps done them more often, especially if it was like a dynamic event. So people got event completion and so on and so forth whenever someone got through the finish line or something like that. Like something to make it open worldy. The fact that they're adding like really interesting in a lot of ways new content, but locked behind this guild system, is not how I'd have approached it in the first place. So I mean,
I think it would be cool if it, like, I'm okay with Guild Rushes being both,
right?
Like being open world things, but then also, okay, you guys have to do this one specific one within this set time frame.
Yeah. Like I like the idea of there being, of the guild missions using existing content or reusing existing content. So the fact that they're adding stuff would mean they're adding it for everyone rather than just a subsection. Because when we first talked about guild missions, we were talking about how cool it would be if we just like reopened one of the story missions for the guild to go into and
yeah, like,
have like, specific objectives.
I think I said using Claw Island and making some sort of horde mode.
Exactly. Like, having that as your guild mission could be really cool. And that's actually a place that's big enough to support like 30 people. Claw Island specifically is big enough. And like with all the ships and stuff, they could come in. And that would have been awesome. So it would just be reusing a content they already had, but with guilds. And so, yeah, when you ask me like how I'd prefer it, I would prefer it, like, even though you do have an argument of with Skyrim, part of the problem is you could do all that stuff at the start. So there's not necessarily any differentiation or progression of content, which is true.
Well, no, like the one thing with Skyrim was just everything is so detailed and like identifiable, whereas mm-hmm. Guild Wars, there's some places that just have no meaning right now.
So you're saying
they're so far off the beaten path and very like people haven't gone to yet.
Well, so you're actually siding with me and saying you prefer the way Skyrim does it.
Is no, sure? I like the way Guild Wars 2 does it.
Oh, so you actually like it being like more obscure and harder to find, but not necessarily there for meaning?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm on the other side of that camp. I like things that have meaning that you can progress through and have like their own like internal stories that you kind of experience. So you go there and you, for a reason.
So it's not just a fucking mindless thing you just did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's at least how I see it. But for Thurbleton, fuck. For Thurbleton, for him, exploration is kind of its own fun. Would you say that's correct about yourself?
Yeah, I guess the one example I can give for Guild Wars was when I was with Suki and Benny back in the day where we were in, I want to say, Lorner's Pass, and we just saw this hill and we saw some mobs on the hill and we're like, we're going to find a way up that hill.
Yeah.
And we ended up just like traversing the entire map until we found this cave underwater that led to this whole jumping puzzle. But then we had to cheese our way over the jumping puzzle to get to where these mobs were.
Yeah.
And there was just this boss troll. And that was a story unto itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
There was no reason, rhyme or reason for those guys to be there. And since then, ArenaNet has sort of like added something to do with there. But
right. But if you compare that to like experience I had in Skyrim, it would be there was this one time where I was like just walking in and it popped up. There's a cave nearby. I woke up to the cave, and from the outside it just looked like a normal fucking cave. But when you go inside, it's like this huge internal like forest with like a hill in the center of the forest and like a huge light like break in the hill above it. So there's a gigantic light shaft and like all this sunlight within this cave that you couldn't have seen from inside. But as you progress through the forest and make your way to the top of the hill, you have like these enemies that you barely ever see anywhere else in the game spawn, which are just like these like oaky kind of monsters. And you kind of make your way through them, and at the top of the hill, there's like the mother of all those oak monsters you had killed on your way up there, and she's really pissed at you because you killed all her kids and wandered into their home. Like that's kind of like the one little like instance that happened within Skyrim. And
I think I've been in that cave.
Yeah, it's a really memorable one.
There's a quest to kill her.
There might be, but I actually kind of stumbled onto it. And so yeah, it's just like totally stuff like that is how I prefer content to go. So the fact that they've added content, like a meaning behind the one you talked about earlier with Sookie and Benny, is probably leaning closer to how I would like it. But anyway, we're kind of straying from the point here. But did you like the guild's puzzle things? What are they called?
I mean, like I'm eagerly awaiting for us to unlock it, but at the same time, I would love to see more just mini dungeons.
Mm. Yeah, just like just as part of the world for everyone to access.
Yeah. Or more jumping puzzles. But it seems like the people working on that are now working on Super Adventure Box Part right. 2 instead. Which, I mean, I'll be eagerly awaiting that. It's just, it's nice to see, I don't know, do you guys prefer smaller works that they've added to the game that are individual in their own right? Like, you know, would you want three mini jumping puzzles or one big Super Adventure Box?
I'm a person who I like one massive content dump like once a quarter. That's how I like stuff, because I'm off playing freaking Phoenix Wright and whatever else is in my way. Like I only want to come back to a game every now and then and then just be able to like sit there and go through all this content that I've missed over the last couple of months. And that's easy. Like when they put in Super Adventure Box, I eventually put aside the time to jump in and play Super Adventure Box with you and the other guys. And I found that fun. So like, but if they'd added like, if they'd split Super Adventure Box into like the effort into that, into like many little changes throughout the world, I probably wouldn't have really gone back to see any of that. Like, cause it's just not, it's not something as exciting to me as like one big piece of new content. So I'm actually, that's my vote. How about the other?
No, both sides are valid in their own right, and it's interesting. Durin? It's interesting to see who weighs on that. Durin, what do you think?
I think I'm kind of a cynic. I think the things like the Super Adventure Box is what I want to see out of this game. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that the way they've handled the Living Story stuff and the Flame and Frost and everything, culminating up to this one dungeon that's going to last us 2 weeks. I don't like that. I don't like that if that's the direction this game's going to go.
Right.
Like things like I want a Super Adventure Box every 2 months. Yeah. I'd be happy with that.
Yeah. Or like a new fractal or something like that. Like the
right. Yeah. Yeah. What I mean is like something on that level.
Yeah.
I would like to have that every couple of months rather than like every month getting this tiny update with like a new quest chain and maybe one new NPC to go talk to that has some story.
Well, let's rephrase it. I want a new set piece or spectacle piece to view every couple of months.
Yeah
something like
even
this,
even if it had to be like every 3 months, like even then I think I'd be okay with that.
But it has to be on the scale of a set piece. Like I need to go there and be wowed, and I was like the first couple times I did fractals, I was wowed by them. I thought they were freaking awesome, and
especially the snow one. We thought that one was really cool.
Cool.
One was really good.
And remember when we were excited about Guild Wars in it?
If he was excited, he wouldn't be cynical then. Rama, what do you think about, like, do you want to see just, you know, massive updates every 3 months or?
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like the anticipation, I think they should do a mix of like maybe an update every half year, like, and then small things cluttered around in between.
It definitely seems like the massive ones would bring people back into the game, whereas the little ones would keep people playing.
Yes.
Like super actives. And it just, which sort of group are they catering to per month or whatever?
Right.
Well, and the problem with spanning it out like every 6 months or something in terms of like the massive big updates is unlike games like WoW or Rift or something, this game doesn't really have the end game to keep players interested in playing the game for 6 months or a year while they go and make an expansion or something. I think that's the biggest reason why expansion isn't something they're looking at and they're doing kind of these smaller chunks is they with not having a true end game to this game, they really have to be like laser focused on constantly giving us new stuff to get us to keep playing this game and logging in.
Why don't they just make an end game then, man? should hire me.
Because that carrot on a stick has to constantly be ahead of you or else people get bored.
Hmm. Yeah. They did something, you know, in that direction at least with Fractals, but right. put their own kind of spin on it.
Yeah.
And it's definitely there like for the people who want that kind of progression stuff. Yeah. But I think that what they're probably running into now is realizing that in order to keep those players interested, you can't simply just release something like that. I mean, they release the Fractals up to like level 80 or whatever, and then like you can actually keep playing past that, but there's not really much of a point in doing so.
Exactly.
They haven't followed up on it. That's the problem, is like they haven't followed up on it, and most likely they probably aren't going to for a while.
A long while.
And you can't let progression get stagnant. And I think that's the thing they're going to learn from the Fractal stuff. Is yep. I think they expected to release that and like, okay, here's your guys' progression stuff. Now let's work on this story stuff because that's what we really want to work on. And I think that's going to bite them later on.
Well, and I guess sort of on this topic, but I guess we can move to just this forum post by Colin Johansson and then you guys can talk about spectating. Sure. But he did talk about the whole living story and having 2 week old or having dungeons that last 2 to 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Pretty much is they're trying their best to give us this sense of like, you know, evolution and how, like the world's constantly changing. Not quite like, you know, it's their take on endgame opposed to progression. And just basically he was in Votacommas saying, yo, we're shooting from the hip on this. we hope these are good ideas. We're basically pushing them out to the community and we're not sure, like, this is why we have stuff like the backlash from the Karka event, because we thought it would be a good idea.
And yeah. some parts of the Karka thing were cool.
Some parts were awesome.
There's nothing wrong with making bad things when you're trying something new. It's just bad to repeat these mistakes over and over again, which they haven't.
They've definitely been trying new things every turn.
Yeah.
Which I definitely pat on the back to ArenaNet.
Hmm.
Yeah, I guess
I think to put a cap on it, good, I would say that I think their current thing with one a month is just a little bit too fast because
quality of content simply
exactly
is not,
like the things that were in the cooker for a bit longer, like Super Adventure Box have been awesome and Fractals have been awesome. It's the things that have been spreading across months and specifically Flame and Frost that have just been boring and lame. So I think. At least in terms of an experiment, the Flame and Frost side of it may have failed, but the stuff they've actually invested time in and thought into has been pretty awesome. We've all been pretty positive about. So I think hopefully they realize that that is the response they're getting. So maybe they'll go away and just straight up go, fuck it. Fuck this like living story crap to some extent and just like have these really cool, really well-cooked piece of content every like 2 months, which is kind of what we're getting now.
Or just have that be the living story, like rather than every, because the way it's been this first chapter of the living story has been like every month they add some little bit of piece that kind of moves the story a bit further and a bit further and a bit further, eventually leading to what we have now. And instead what they could do is one thing that we've noticed with how they are patching the game is they will actually like kind of put things in live rather than like take servers down, put patches. Like the way that they're able to update this game really allows them to kind of have a longer focus on like what they want to do with the stuff and like have the multiple steps in place and then just kind of slowly ungate it, I guess, like release this bit, then release that bit, then release that bit. But like take some time to actually make that stuff compelling.
Yeah.
And then slowly release it out. Basically, what I mean is like basically do it like they would do a TV show where they film it all at once and then you see episode after episode, week after week.
Mm-hmm.
like make all this content, even if it's going to take them a few months to get all this content made or what have you. Make all of this content and then slowly dole it out to us, every couple of weeks, every month, whatever. Right. And while they're doling that out, they can already be working on the next stuff.
Yeah.
And
rather than flying by the seat of the pants like they are right now.
Right. One complaint I have is he argues that because they're taking away new things, like the new things they're adding because they want to make it a living world. But I don't think you need necessarily take away things to have it be a living world, as long as you're adding stuff on. And I don't know, the idea of them working on a dungeon that's only going to be around for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. it seems kind of pointless.
It's wasteful.
Yeah, like taking things away does not make it a living world. Like if you want to have some massive war going on and like a city gets leveled and you take that away because of what's happening in the story, sure, that is a living story. That works.
Yeah.
But like, putting resources into putting a dungeon into the game that's going to last for 2 weeks
and
then it's going to go away, or like Super Adventure Box that's going to be around for a month and then go away and might come back at some point, mm-hmm. we hope. That's just not a good use of resources.
The thing is, it's not even changing simply because they're giving it and then taking it away. Changing would be you're literally seeing something change rather than, hey, here's this. Like, too bad. 2 weeks
over. I think the example I always would use would be in Diesa Plateau and Nagling, the giant that always attacks, evolve that story to be either the giant has completely destroyed the city
or the giant's gone.
They have found some giant destroying tool in a shed. And
exactly.
Now it's just like the giant's children.
Yeah, because like to Noob's point, like when all this Flame and Frost stuff is done, the game's going to be just like it was before it started.
Yeah.
That's not a living story.
Well, and Colin Johnson has said that like they hope to use like maybe some of the bosses we'll see as bounties, and they might chop up the dungeon and use part of it as a fractal, because the whole thing is not normal fractal length. So maybe like cut down on the number of bosses or something.
Okay.
But they are saying they aren't just going to throw away all that stuff. And really, I enjoy it. Like when we ran it, I like looking at some of the walls and the design of the level as possibly them looking into like underground zones. But that's just me wanting to have an underground zone.
Well, but again, like that's fine that they're not wanting to just completely throw it away. But now we're just talking about recycling.
Yeah, like maybe have it for like 3 months and then get rid of it.
I find
what I'm saying is like we're talking about recycling content instead of like actually adding to the game world.
Yeah, I find it's weird that they're doing this, considering in the original Guild Wars, they have – I guess it doesn't work because it's no longer instanced completely. But they've had content where it simply just adds on. They don't take it away. It's simply more stuff for you to do in the world and continues the story in Guild Wars Beyond.
Yeah.
And I don't understand – like it works so well for them there.
Yeah, why has it changed? Why are you doing something?
I can understand because of the instance system. It's no longer instanced, so you can't just have level 20s running around in level 5 zones. Mm-hmm. But – I don't know. It seems just
I think it seems
inefficient and wasteful.
Beyond that, I think that they did something really interesting with Fractals and Super Adventure Box in that those pieces of content kind of had their own internal progression. Like for Super Adventure Box, it would be like getting your way towards that really cool, really pretty, like digitized loot, and for the Fractals, it's getting the Ascended gear and that kind of stuff. I could see a world where they cook these things for as long as they have been. So I think it was like, 3 month turnaround for Super Venture Box. But invest a little bit more time into just like having more stuff from that progression. So not just like 6 pieces of equipment, but like legitimately cool stuff that could like customize the way your character works in some ways as well, like maybe a skill that's associated with that dungeon that kind of like levels up or like weird stuff like that, and then have those dungeons around for 2 months or 3 months, like if they want to use the same thing they have been doing, or they think what they've been doing has been effective in giving us this content and taking it away. I think that's crazy, because I think that if Super Adventure Box had a more interesting and developed progression and just left it there, that could be just as good. But either way, the fact that they had those progressions there means that if they double down the progression and left it there for longer, they could essentially use the content they've been working on for longer. And that's like, that makes sense to me. I'm just crazy. I just find it crazy they're not doing that. I think the Fractals is the best example of putting an internalized progression in and people loving it and sticking with it for way longer than I would have expected them to. Because what Fractals is like, what, 4 months old or something like that now? And people still do Fractals today?
I think because it is a grind, people are going into it.
But that's kind of the thing. Like, it's
a very easy way to get like rares and exotics.
It's true.
Right.
Stuff.
But yeah, I like.
See, I don't know why they took out farming, because I think that's the most popular part of Guild Wars.
Guild Wars 1, yeah. Farming was a thing. Farming
that's
was like.
That's what kept me in. It sucked, don't get me wrong. But I hated it, but I did it anyways, and I was playing the game. So there you go.
Do they have farming and structured PvP?
They do have farming and structured PvP to some extent.
Can you watch it with spectator mode?
You can watch it with. Well, okay. You can't watch it with spectator
mode. Forced segues, best ever.
You cannot watch it with spectator mode. So the crazy
like
thing
switch.
About that was actually really great. The crazy thing about the new custom arenas stuff is, and how it relates to spectator mode. I just want to get this out front because I think this is the most interesting part of the discussion. Is they're limited by 20 people in a server, right? So some of the most interesting stuff that the community has been doing with those custom arenas has been these like weird 10v10 deathmatch arenas and like 8v8 deathmatch arenas or 1v1s, 1v1 arenas, which you just go into to see how well you do 1v1. So it was like 3v3 total. And so there'd be one fight at each point, and that's how it kind of works. But like you couldn't like for some of the more crazy ones like those 10v10 arenas, I can't spectate. Because if I'm spectating, I'm literally taking up a slot which is required for the arena. So if I'm spectating a 10v10 arena, then one team will lose because they literally have one less person. Because they can only hold 20 people, which is I think is crazy. Any thoughts on that? Or do you just leave that
by yourself? I imagine that's a server thing. Like they might get rid of that later on or up it later on.
Yeah.
But for now, let's be fair here. Like, are you really going to spectate a 10v10 or are you going to spectate a 5v5? Why would you ever spectate anything that is not a 5v5?
Let's just say that I only have one filter and it's called 5v5.
Exactly. That's the same filter I have.
I think Shinboy is right in his guess that they're just having they don't have the server capabilities.
He's only the first month. Yeah. But let's just put that point aside because I'm just going to use that as a statement. Then, it'd be interesting if they added even more slots to these arenas. But I like spectator mode. Let's just how crazy is that? After my rant last week. My long ass rant. 180?
You know what's funny? I know 180. You like
it. It's not a 180.
Like
but
a
it's
90?
It's like it's no what? That's a right turn. That's neither here nor there. I guess a 90,
he is okay with what they have made spectator mode out to be.
No.
He wishes it was observer mode.
No, it's I think that for what it is, it's really well executed. So like they achieved what they wanted to do really well. Like whether I agree with that, like for me, let's just take someone else's perspective on this. Durin, how do you like spectator mode?
I think it's way better than what I would have expected out of a spectator mode.
Yeah.
In MMO.
It's really good, right? It's like not bad at all. Like you can click on dudes.
Oh yeah, it's great. Like you can watch from people's perspective, like with your own camera control, you can watch from set points on the map. I do wish there was a free roam one, but I understand because they do have, I guess, I don't know. They said that there are some things they haven't done because of cheating. I don't think this is necessarily because of that. I think this is more of like just a logistics issue.
Well, it was
cameras
on
around
the ArenaNet PvP stream. I think it was yesterday, Thurbleton, or was it the day before? It was yesterday. They actually had that a question, and what it was is they are actually considering you'd have, and that's essentially the only difference in terms of camera controls specifically between spectator mode and observer mode that I can see, especially with how well they've executed it. In that they are working on having a free roam camera and a highlights camera, but they just haven't put that in yet, or they just want to see the demand is for those. But yeah, that's like
I think free roam is going to have a high demand.
Yeah,
I mean, like my one advice.
Your cameras are kind of bad.
My one advice to anybody who is listening and also wants to do shoutcasting matches, I guess, Like in the back of my head, I was wondering like how could you do this from like just a shoutcasting idea while listening to the pod, like listen to podcasts.
Yeah,
is have the game being recorded on like I don't know, Fraps or some sort of like recording thing.
Yeah,
and then after a match or something, play it back. Like you know, you can fast forward and like you can slow down. The motion. Yeah. The one issue with that is it's what you're watching at the time.
Yeah.
But that can at least let you, like, in between matches or something while you're talking to another shoutcaster, you can, like, review on a Twitch page. Mm-hmm. Hey, see how he did this? And you can slow it down. You can rewind it.
Yeah.
And that's a way of, like, Arena will see that the shoutcasters really want to use tools like this, and they're having to bootleg MacGyver their own tools.
and I will... You know, kudos to ArenaNet because not only have they put this in there, mm-hmm. but like the day or day after that it was released,
yeah,
they were on Twitch. There was a guy that was actually doing a shoutcasting stream, mm-hmm. And they were on Twitch. It was Carl and I'm forgetting the other guy's
John
name.
Sharp.
John Sharp. Yeah.
Yep.
We're both in chat, asking like basically asking for you know criticism, like you know what could we like? They straight up asked like. What could we do to make casting easier for you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let us know.
Sexual so, like, they, who get they are
they're
off.
Definitely out getting out there, reaching out to the community, and finding out ways to allow shoutcasters to do their job better.
Yeah,
and that's great.
And so to give you some perspective, Durin, as I said earlier, like Guild Wars 1 Observer Mode was essentially everything this has, and this actually does what that did pretty much just as well, only slightly. Less well in that I think like the only negative I have with how it is at the currently is if you use your own camera to like look around a dude as they're moving, say you're observing a single person, then if you let go it automatically like adjusts back to the direction they're running. And that can be pretty
See, I actually like that it does that.
I actually kind of don't like that. Me and Shinboy don't like that. But
now when it does that,
yeah,
there is no like actually literally seeing from their camera, is there?
No. That would be ultra interesting. That's what I
would really like to see.
Yeah,
I would be really interested to see that.
Hugely interesting because it would be just crazy to see how different it is. I would prefer
that over a free roam.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So the only difference is between how this is done in observer mode back in the day, aside from recording and all the aside from that stuff which I talked about in length last week, so I won't touch on again.
Thank you.
Yeah, is the free roam. Like that's the you could click on someone, you'd see what they'd be doing. Before you couldn't see their action bar, like their actual skill set before.
There is one other thing that streamers seem to like, or at least people in the chat I've seen wanted,
right.
Was that the health bars are right as of now shown on the top left and top right corner of the screen. People would want to see health bars on the players, like above their heads.
Oh. And they are if you click on or if they're clicked on or something.
Yeah.
But they're what you see in the game, which are really hard to see and focus on.
Yeah.
They definitely needed to like accentuate those a lot more for sure.
Well, I think
I will say while those guys were in chat, they were also answering some questions from the chat as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they did kind of let out a couple of things that they're working on right now. One of those is the AoE circles.
Yeah,
they're working on ways to make those a lot more vibrant and noticeable.
Okay.
Especially on like different terrain types where it can be a little harder to see them.
Cool.
They're also
or if people are colorblind and it's a red circle on a brown ground.
Yeah. And then they're also wanting to implement kind of alongside that in your I guess it would be like in your graphics options a like level of detail for like spell effects and stuff.
Okay.
To make it easy. See what's going on in a fight because sometimes it can get a little crazy.
Right.
So those are some of the things that they're actively working on that they kind of let out during it, just kind of in that chat that I hadn't heard elsewhere at least.
Yeah. But back to spectator mode, I think the number one thing they're missing is to be able to double click on a person to immediately swap to their camera view. Because at the moment,
that would be nice.
Unless I'm crazy, you have to like look at them, read their name, find them on the top left or top right hand side, and then click on them there to be able to see what the fuck they're doing. Because it'd be crazy.
Can you click on the minimap?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you can click because for those unaware, in the spectator mode, the greatest thing for you as a spectator is the minimap because it actually shows you little icons in team colors as to where everyone is on the map. So unlike playing PvP, where you can't really tell where everyone is, you can actually tell in spectator mode. who they are and where.
And not just icons, but they are also class-specific icons.
Yeah. So you like a little warrior symbol running around, a little thief symbol running around. So you can see, like, for example, I was spectating a match and I saw, like, oh shit, it's a thief versus a mesmer. I want to see how that goes down. So I was able to. But then I had to, like, go, like, find the nearest area cam, look at their direction, see what their names were, and then find them on the thing and to see them.
Wait, but, you have to go, there's no follow cam? So you have to do area cam?
No. There what? Is a follow cam, but you can't click on the character to follow them. You have to be able to, you have to find their name on the list.
You have to know what their name is and choose it on, yeah.
Yeah, you have to click that health bar on, like, the top left or top right, and then you can, yeah.
Yeah.
That seems weird.
Well, yeah, but aside from that, it's actually really great.
I mean, as a first implementation of this, it's actually really, really well done.
Yeah,
because from a programmer standpoint, that's the simplest way to do it. But from a spectator, like from a shoutcaster or spectator, that is like, why would they do that?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what are you talking about? Why can't I click on the dude?
Because it's easier to program, click the stationary thing on the top right UI.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interact through the game.
And I would rather have that than have this come out like 6 months later while they figure out how to do that.
And just like to get out there, it's freaking silky smooth, which I think is the best part about it. And you totally...
Like a baby's bottom, indeed.
You can totally...
like Calvin Klein.
Like the area maps are pretty good. I think some of them are like... So for example, there's a camera near, just above... each of the points, and most of them are pretty good. I think some of them are like slightly weird spots, but in general, they're pretty good. Like you can get a definite feel for what's happening in a specific spot.
Yeah,
yeah.
Unless people are fighting them in mid, which they shouldn't be anyway. But when they are, it can be a little hard to find a stationary camera to actually see them.
Yeah.
One nice thing I did like is like when the way you actually go to spectate is you actually just join a server, and then from there you choose like do I want to spectate? Do I want to be on Team Red, Team Blue, or Random? So what's nice about that is if you're like say spectating a game and really enjoying what you're watching and everything, when it ticks over to the next map, you then have the option to join the game if you want.
Yeah, which is cool. Which I totally did sometimes. Yeah. Like, there was like a mesmer I wanted to it was a ranger I wanted to fight, and then I was like, sweet, there's a ranger. He was in blue team last time. I joined red team. Turned out he didn't rejoin the match, but it was it's great to have that option to just like to watch for a couple rounds. It's a bit off if you think about it, but these aren't really supposed to be competitive like matches yet anyway, so it's totally a good feature to have, to be able to join. And I think you can join anytime if you hit B, right? Or am I crazy?
Can I don't know, I haven't actually tried that.
I don't know.
I'd imagine if there was a spot open,
maybe. Anyway, I would
imagine you'd be able to front, like, it would be really dumb if, like, you were spectating, there was a spot open, and you had to leave the server and then rejoin to join.
Exactly.
Surely you're able to do that.
And I haven't tested this, but I believe if you hit B, I know for certain that if you're a spectator and you hit B, you can actually see the server number that you're currently on, which is totally useful. It's in the top left-hand corner of the B menu. But I don't think they've added that to the player menu B.
What?
Yeah. Well, I was talking to Shinboy, and he was like, I can't see it.
Right?
They should be, right? But I don't see it. Another note would be, which is really great how they've done it, because it's live scoring. You can see where everything's going, which is awesome. They've changed up some of the messages. So it's like, the red team have taken the blah, blah, blah. They've changed up some of those slightly for spectator mode.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's all good, but I would add, if you hit since they don't have graphs, and they obviously can't have graphs because there's no graphs yet in the game anyway, if you hit the B menu, it would be good to be able to click on a player and see what his current scores are. That would be really cool. So if you're like,
another thing that'd be really nice go ahead and continue that.
Oh, if there was like like for example, I've seen like warriors, I suppose they really shouldn't PvP at the moment, but for a lot of the matches I've seen, warriors have been like getting shitloads of points. So I want to see like how they're getting those points.
Because they're blazing everybody.
Yeah, if it's just like if they're like 200 points and almost all those are from kills, but with no point neutralizations or captures, then I'm just going to shake my head because that's just the worst way to play. But if they're
that's not being bad. That's just players being bad.
Yeah, and so I would love to see like. I'd be able to like because sometimes, and if you're really lucky, you're on a good server and the same dudes play for a couple matches in a row. So I followed this one really good ranger for a while, and I would love to see, like, even though I'm watching him, I'd still love to see like what he's been doing, like what his priorities are and why he's doing so well in the match. Because if I could click on his name, I could see, okay, he's actually focusing on neutralizations rather than captures or like that kind of stuff. It would be really good. But no, it's just really great as it is. I'm really happy with
One other thing that I've heard a lot of complaints about this, and it's something that I feel like I understand why they left it off, because again, they wanted to get this out there probably as quick as they could. Mm-hmm. But again, for like shoutcasting and stuff, it's going to be a necessity. Is I think that from the spectator mode, they need to surface like when a point is being contested or being grabbed.
Yeah,
there needs to be a slider on there showing like who has control, who's gaining control, who's losing control.
Oh,
there
is cool.
Nothing right now. There is really no cool. way for you to tell as a spectator right now.
Yeah, just straight up, like Carl and John were totally doing some shoutcasting yesterday, and they'd be focusing on a point, and it'd be just a scrimmage of like a 3v3 in a 5v5 match. So six people were on one point, and they're totally commentating on that. But in the meantime, like other points were being handed over and stuff. And those are like legitimately way more important to the match, because it doesn't matter what's happening here. If this point isn't being contested, it's just being held really well. What really matters is what's happening over there with those points being neutralized and transferred. Like I want to see, and without those notifications or way to tell what's really happening or more surfaced way to tell what's happening, it's hard for them as casters to really even realize that those things are like important stuff is happening on the other side of the map. So yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And also obviously secondary objectives. So like along those lines, it would be cool if the shoutcasters had like a timer or a time down, as opposed to what most people do, which is like a time up, to when, for example, Niflhel. If you're playing Niflhel, you don't know when the thing's going to come up specifically, when they're going to respawn.
Yeah.
But if the shoutcaster had that,
and that's why they won't add things like that is, right. Again, like one of the reasons why they haven't added some things to this game that people would have liked is because, well, no, it's because it's live, but specifically it's because of the possibility of cheating.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why it shouldn't be live.
Yeah.
Like, exactly, it should be a 5 or 6 or 7 second delay or something, so that they can add these much needed functions. At least. It shouldn't be that long. That gets to the point of being a little ridiculous. But like, as quick as this moves, like 6 or 7 seconds is probably enough of a delay that you won't really have to worry about cheating so much from a spectator standpoint.
Right.
But it allows them then to give the spectators the tools they need to actually shoutcast things correctly.
Yeah, and so that kind of brings it back to like, I get to answer News' question at the top, or was it Thurbleton's? No, I haven't turned 180 on this. This is still not exactly what I want, but
90.
No, because 90 is neither direction. I've turned like 170, so close to being satisfied, but not satisfied. 90 is literally.
I think 90 would be meeting it halfway.
No, 90 would be like seeing something and one side being one direction of your thinking, the other side being the other direction of your thinking. And 90 would be like, I went in a completely different direction. Well, no, it's just I went in a completely different direction. Like, if you look at an angular thing, you've gone right angles to it.
Well, yeah.
And go, okay. But anyway, talking about the most random bullshit. I don't think this is what I would have wanted, but they're doing a good job of executing what they have. I think that this is still really good.
Yeah. Again, like I said earlier, like as a kind of first implementation of this, this is probably the best they could have done, really.
Yeah.
With having no real feedback of like what players, they had feedback of what players wanted, but no realistic feedback of what players wanted, because everybody wanted the fucking moon.
Yeah.
So like, this is a really good start for them. They're actively going out there asking people, you know, what they want to see to make this better. Mm-hmm. So I imagine as this year goes on, we're going to see a lot of changes to this and
well, a lot of improvements to this.
Have them and specifically, like they said that they are doing things to try and bolster the shoutcasting community. So in doing that, like we're definitely going to be seeing some changes to this to make shoutcasting easier.
Yeah.
And I just think that they're definitely in a really good spot right now with it.
And I'm still holding hope for eventually having time-delayed recordings on the server, because they didn't actually say they're not going to do that. It's just that their response to that question was they decided what was the things they needed to focus on first and executed on that, which I guess they did. As a person who was really down on it last week, this is, again, I still have those criticisms, but I don't want to focus on them because what I wanted is nothing. Like, it's not really important to what the game is. Like, what the game is what it is. So I think what they have done is pretty damn cool. And most importantly, it passed the number one test, as Durin will attest to, in that I have sat around and just watched Spectator Mode for like an hour. All right, so just
final cap on it. Cynic, good Spectator Mode, or are you content with it for now?
Well, that's kind of the point I'm getting to. Durin, did you get like the same thing as me? I just like sat around and watched it while chatting on Mumble, right?
Yeah, like I was playing another game on the other screen.
Yep.
But then I was like watching that on, or I was watching like Giant Bomb videos or something on one screen. Mm-hmm. But I was like kind of always going back and watching this. And then like as a server would just kind of slowly dwindle down to like, you know, a 2v2 or something.
Yep.
Just leave that server, go join another server, and yep. Just have it running like all day. Just kind of as a side thing to do while I'm doing other stuff.
Exactly. It's like the number one test. Is it something you'd watch in your spare time just cause? And yeah, I totally did that for like a day. It was just like me watching Warriors and seeing how they're doing and like what builds they're using and like just writing some of those builds down to test out later. And that, to answer your question, yeah, that means it's successful. It was able to make me do that. It's successful. It totally works. It's great. And I need to say that does not mean that there isn't a way to go or no criticisms to level at it. I'm just happy with what they have given us so far. So yeah.
You're happy that there is a spectator mode now.
Yeah, yeah, and it's
awesome,
and it's well executed for what it is. It's legitimately cool and watchable. So yeah, it's good.
Durin, same feelings or?
Yeah, it's like actually it's. To it? I didn't have the expectations that Cynic did, so actually for me, I feel like they went above and beyond what I expected out of a spectator mode for MMO structure.
What is your perspective on this? Like, have you seen like other spectator modes and stuff? Like, because StarCraft has a spectator mode.
No,
it?
For me, well, it's not necessarily a spectator mode.
For MMOs, no.
Right. It's for MMOs, the amazing thing is custom arenas to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because like spectator mode is something like, you know, you might see in like WoW or something, but the idea of a custom arena,
WoW doesn't have it either.
I guess just through.
In fact, which we see. But not only does WoW not have it, WoW will have it before much longer. They've already been talking about it. It's going to be in like either in the next.
Gee, I wonder how. I wonder what led after. Them to think about that.
Yeah.
Well, it's possible, but
I was actually just listening to a WoW podcast a few days ago, and they were talking about it, and I was like,
Did they mention the Guild Wars 2?
They'll never mention Guild Wars 2, but yeah.
This was Game Breaker, and they still didn't mention Guild Wars 2.
But no, it's totally... I think that's the other half of this conversation. So that was spectator mode, but I think like the other half is custom arenas. And even though I opened with it at the start, there's another element to it. Arena is supposedly, and this is again coming from their most recent shoutcast, they're using custom arenas to find out what the community finds most compelling. And so I'm really excited alongside them to see what the community is doing with those custom arenas. But I'm also kind of saddened by it because at least so far, the stuff that's come up most in custom arenas has been 10v10 deathmatch in the center, which is the worst thing in the fucking world because... Holy shit. Oh my god, that's, can you be less imaginative? 3v3 1v1 arenas, as in teams of 3 versus 3, but you meet at different points. And the other one was a bunch of 5v5 stuff. So, what do you guys think? So, are you guys surprised by most people just going 1v1, 5v5 and deathmatch? Is that like,
no.
That's kind of what we've been saying from the start, right? That's kind of what we've always said. These are the things people want in MMOs, right?
That's what people do in video games in general.
Yeah. It's just like, it's crazy that it required them to see what we were doing, but it's also kind of saddening in that the community hasn't yet done anything interesting with custom arenas. Durin, what are your thoughts? Nothing? Is he there?
Nothing. Yeah. Oh, I'm here. I don't know. I think that trying to like use custom arenas as they are right now to do anything is just dumb. Right. They need to be opened up to the wider public first. Get an idea of what
can we make everyone wants. Yet?
Or? No, not yet. No. We can only
the top like 50 people can, or
we can only help fund them. Apparently.
Oh, that makes more sense because there's a menu there like for
the,
making
the top
it.
50 SPVP players can make them.
Okay, because when
now
you
they,
get
they up, can make, now they can make them open, which means we can join them.
Right.
But they're the only ones that can actually make them.
Oh, that's kind of sad. And that kind of explains why there's so little variety, because there is I was confused because if you open up your PvP menu, there's straight up a menu there in your PvP menu for making a custom arena, like already, like right now. So you can kind of see what the options are if you want to at the moment. And so I thought that the stuff we were seeing was community stuff, but now you guys are saying it's top 50. That makes so much more sense to me because there's no variety there. I was so disappointed to see it was just 3v3, 10v10, and 5v5 as the top couple. I was like, oh, come on.
I really enjoyed just there's a forum post of somebody who was complaining that they only did PvP on their character. They hadn't done a lick of WoW or PvE.
Yeah.
And the fact that ArenaNet was charging them gems when there's no way to get gems in PvP, that seems kind of, you know, rude that, like, that he has to go into the PvE world to do it. And I don't, like, I think
that's a good argument. I think that's a good argument.
No, that's a terrible argument. There's no way to get gems in PvE.
No, but he's saying that in PvE, you can trade silver and gold for gems. That's the basic transferable item. You don't get any silver or gold.
No one does it. That's how I have all my gem stuff.
Everyone in the guild does that.
Yeah, everyone does. Really? That's how I have all my... I've never paid money except for the one time where I wanted that armor. Like, it's just... So,
I guess saying that there's some you would like there to be some way to transfer, what is it, glory for gems?
Maybe
glory for another currency that will also act as a way to pay.
Like how I would do it is that there's totally a Mystic Forge in the PvP arenas, and how you make a bunch of your PvP armor is to use that Mystic Forge. I'd say just have a recipe in the Mystic Forge that gives you gems or whatever. It's like either gems or gold or an equivalent to gold to transfer to gems, so they don't fuck up that too much. But there is legitimately no way for a PvP only player to get gems. Like, there's no way for them to get gold.
Since you bring that up, it's less crazy that guy posted that.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense that a lot of people would overlook that because, you're right. Yeah, there's no way to get gems.
A lot of people are just like, there's no way to get gems in PvE either.
Yeah, but they've totally forgotten that the basic transferable is gold. But
I can't believe you guys actually work for gems rather than just buying them.
I buy them.
That's weird.
I buy them. So
I buy them.
But I guess
I should probably real quickly say I misspoke earlier or misheard, I guess, whenever I saw it. They actually don't have any plans for a spectator mode in WoW.
Oh. But they do have custom arenas, wasn't that what you were saying? Or no?
No.
Oh, okay. No. So just nothing. Just nothing in WoW.
No. They have arena and they have rated battlegrounds. Right. And then they have normal battlegrounds.
Arena sounds a lot like ArenaNet.
Oh,
ending this Guild Wars 2 podcast on the note of World of Warcraft. Any plugs from you guys? Going to start with Cynic?
Try out spectator mode. See if it gets you back into PvP. I was wondering if it would get me back into PvP, but it hasn't. Probably just because it's just too much of a time investment. But yeah, just try out spectator mode. Aside from that, it would be Thomas Was Alone. It's $10 or free on PSN. Check it out.
Very cool. And also, like what you were saying with the matches you've watched, it's the top 50, like, you know, the 1v1 fights, the 10. So they're not the fights you want to contribute to.
I want to see interesting new modes coming out of it, but we won't see that until it gets opened up. But I will say,
hopefully for the future, you'll jump in later on.
And I will say that you can put in filters. So me and Durin probably have the same thing, which is a filter for matches that allow for spectating and are 5v5. That's essentially the only two elements to the filter. So it totally works. You can just see actual matches where people
the only filter you need.
Yeah, it's the only one you need. You can watch 5v5 matches improper in SVVP, which is kind of what you want. So, yeah.
Sweet. Durin, any plugs from you, sir?
I'll also plug a game, I guess. Game Dev Tycoon. It's an awesome game. Go check it out. There's a demo for it. Don't pirate it. Go to greenheartgames.com. It's available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. Like I said, it's $8, but there's a free demo that it's actually a pretty lengthy demo because again, the game spans 30 years. The demo gives you the first 5 years.
Cool.
So it's actually it's a good chunk of the game. I actually got a game over during the demo, so there's definitely plenty of stuff there. But yeah, go check it out. It's $8.
Right on. Of New Brawler.
PC What's Gaming what? Hub. If you bought
so Battlefront
2,
God damn it.
We're probably gonna end up or I'm just gonna make an event right now.
I might have during this podcast.
Right. So there you go. So come play video games with us. And yeah, I guess. Oh, and read Pygmy. Pygmy is a great book.
There we go.
Chuck Palahniuk.
I'll put that in the show notes.
If you don't like dark humor or you bad don't language. Have the stomach to stand up sometime. Yeah, there's a little bit of bad language, but it's mostly like humorous.
By bad language, I mean poor or different types ways of writing English. So yeah.
Oh yes. Right. Yes. If you have a low tolerance for that.
Poor English, sort of the yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. And I guess for plugs for me, I guess we'll do the emails at thelincolncast@gmail.com. Twitter at the Lincoln Cast. We are no more questions unless you have like a really silly, pointless question for mm-hmm. Josh Foreman.
Yep.
We should have that set up for next week.
Wait. So my current list is bone in, bone less, and that's pretty much the end of the list. What else do we have? Do we have any other stupid questions to ask him?
Oh, I have one.
I'm sure we could figure out some.
if only
there's some way for listeners to send us stupid questions in the mm-hmm. form of 180 characters or less.
And if you doubt that we'll actually ask those questions, you are sorely mistaken, sir, because
I believe it's 140.
We asked Knife or Bat last time, and
I'm perfectly
willing to totally keep doubling down on stupid questions for Josh Foreman. So yeah.
Anyway, thank you for listening to Leaking Cast. Actually, no, it's why do you listen? Oh, jeez.
Get the fuck out of here.